Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, live on Leaving the Ring Radio, 3 hours of boxing talk. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Hectic. It's been hectic, man. It's been one of those type of weeks here in the boxing world. You know, we've covered a lot of the situation that's surrounding PEDs and anything else, you know, TA ratios. We did it on a Friday night special soon after the break. The breaking story of Andre Berto, which a lot of folks have credited Gabriel Montoya, and there's a reason why he broke the Lamont Peterson. But we're going to move on from that subject just because the fact that we covered it fairly well, and we made sure that we filled in any cracks that were seen that people wanted to know, you know, and what we try to do mostly every time we do a show here on Leaving the Ring is entertain, but at the same time is educate. And on that Friday show, we did have a surprise guest who called in and shed more light to the situation, which was Steve Kim. But we also talked about fights, upcoming fights, and what our thoughts were on these upcoming fights. And on Thursday, you know, 3 hours sometimes is just not enough for myself or for Gabriel to cram in. There's so much stuff. And you know, it's funny that sometimes we hear it's a slow week, but then yet we end up leaving this 3 hour boxing radio show, Leaving the Ring, with still probably about another half an hour to an hour of stuff to talk about. If you didn't have a chance to check out The Boxing Fix, their debut aired on Sunday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Check it out. I love the show. I like the fact that these kids, they were able to see my vision about how I wanted to go about with this show, which is kind of a blitz type of style radio show on the horn, really fast paced, covered everything that is on the undercards of boxing, a lot of unappreciated matches, a lot of unappreciated names, and a lot of times you get fight fans that don't even know about these names that are out there. We had Ryan Bivens from Sweet Boxing come on and give his best picks and the fights that you guys should, you know, tune in to watch of that week. And they had Ray Woods. They did their very first interview, and these kids, they did great, man. Joshua McDaniel and Joel, I don't even want to try to pronounce his last name because you know me, I'll butcher it. So I don't know if my co-host had a chance to check out The Boxing Fix, but it was great. I got a lot of great feedback, and I think they hit it out of the park, man. It was an awesome show.
And these guys are, you know, they're learning it. And what I like about them is, you know, Josh and everybody, is that, you know, they're willing to learn and they're willing to do the job right and do their research and stuff. And I really, it's just nice to see, you know. I mean, not saying that nobody else does that. You know, I think the boxing lab does a nice job. And, but these guys are young and it's their first show. And I thought, well, they did a really nice job. Nice compliment to what we're doing here. Ryan Bivens, guy that just knows fights. Guy watches a lot of fights, and it really knows his stuff, knows the European scene, just knows his fights in general. So it was kind of nice. It was a nice little addition that you guys put in there. And he's a guy that really gave so much to our community through sweetboxing.com. So it's kind of nice that he's getting in some way to kind of keep that tradition going, but doing it in a whole other way. So, yeah, man, I'm digging it. It was nice for the – nice to listen to it.
Yeah, you know, and – When I came up with the idea of doing this radio show, which, you know, I've helped out a lot of different radio shows. I've helped them out, you know, in different areas. And, you know, I've even had people actually come up to me and say, hey, you know, if you ever think of another idea of doing a radio show or if you need somebody on your show, keep me in mind. And when I thought about this show, I put so much pressure on both of those guys, Josh and Joel, and I just kind of gave them not just once, numerous rundowns of how I wanted the direction of how I wanted this show. You know, I felt like on Leaving the Ring, we cover a lot of stuff, but sometimes some of the big stories, we get so consumed with it, and listeners and callers, they call in, and that's, you know, the general talk they want to talk about, where we weren't really concentrating, or sometimes, you know, we didn't get to that particular match that was an undercard of an ESPN card or Showtime or HBO. And I felt this was the only way, you know, because we can't, and a lot, you know, when we get a lot of emails, folks are always saying, why can't Leaving the Ring do a Thursday and another day? And, you know, Gable's on the beat. I work on a magazine. I work with the writers for Leaving the Ring. And I do so many other stuff that we just don't have enough time to try to fit another day and it's another set of hours to do it. So we thought, you know, and me and Gable had talked about doing the Box and Fix a while. We didn't have a name for it, though. And we, you know, we did, me and him had agreed, we're like, there has to be something done. We need to find a way, another outlet to show appreciation of these cards that are being made and these fighters that are getting in the ring and they're duking it out. And the Box and Fix, and I think these guys, they nailed it for us. They complimented Leaving in the Ring in so many ways. And I can't wait for their next Sunday show. So anyways, let's get down to some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, you certainly can. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. But you got to get through the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chin, our producer. But, hey, you know what's going to be some good fights coming up? I like the announcement of Victor Ortiz and Josecito Lopez. I don't know. I know some folks were not feeling that fight. Some people were kind of undermining Josecito Lopez's power, saying that they're not really sure if he's going to be able to hang with Victor Ortiz. Ortiz now considered a full-blown 147-pounder fighter, and he's had the better oppositions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everything obviously is pointing against Josecito Lopez. He's kind of looked at as a guy that's just to fill in the space since the Berto fight it just fell apart. Josecito Lopez, though, I think that is a tough, tough opposition and a tough hurdle for Victor to jump over. He's a big kid, you know. He's a very tall kid, much taller than Victor Ortiz. I think he's about an inch taller than him. And you're right, he doesn't pack a big punch, but what he does have in his arsenal, he can overwhelm you. I don't know what your thoughts about that fight, Gabe, if you liked it or not.
I do like it. You know, I was kind of looking at them. I mean, Victor's a little shorter, but he's thicker. You know, he's a big kid, you know, he was always a welterweight waiting to happen. He's not that tall, and Josecito's got a longer reach. So it's going to be interesting to see the power differential. I was talking to Josecito out in L.A. yesterday at the press conference, he's like, you know, 147 is going to be fun for me to be at. You know, I'm going to feel energized. I'm going to feel strong. I think I hit as hard as he does. I have a longer reach. I can box. And you know, we'll talk to him tonight. You know, he'll break it down. But I like the fight. I think it's an action fight. And it's a calculated risk by Alex Campanova over at Thompson Boxing, who represents Josecito Lopez. I mean, we talked briefly about it. And he said, you know, you got to take your shot. Sometimes, you know, the kind of fights that Josecito's at now, it's the big fights are, you know, it's not the big fights are nothing, but it's, these are the risks he has to take in order to get to the next level. Everything else is just kind of going in circles. So I think it's a great fight. It's kind of exciting yesterday, especially like all the stuff I've been writing lately, to just go to Ella, to the press conference, like just talk about good matchups. And, you know, Areola right. Doesn't know who the hell he's fighting. We can talk about him a little bit later with Henry. They brought in another trainer, Danny Zamora. He used to train Johnny Perez, and he's got other fighters as well. He's out of Santa Fe Springs. I think out of their community center or the recreation center. I forget the exact name. But he's brought in to kind of help out. So it's been interesting. You know, there's little shifts here and there. I just got your message through me. But I think that's a good fight. But also, people are forgetting, like, one of the best fights on that card is Humberto Soto versus Lucas Matisse. That's
yeah.
A badass little fight. Dude, it's like 5 minutes from my house at the Staples Center. I'm stoked. That's going to be a good night at the fights.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I mean, if anything, Josecito Lopez and Ortiz could, honestly, that's going to be a fun match. it's going to be a really fun match. I see a lot of different scenarios. I mean, yeah, Victor's a big puncher. You know, he has grown into that body of being 147. He's got speed. But he also has that question that still looms over his head is, what happens under pressure? What happens when things don't go his way? And Josecito has that style that can definitely put a stump there, can definitely make him question himself in the ring. We saw it when he fought Peterson. You know, after Peterson being dropped and Peterson not going away, we saw exactly what Victor decided to do, which was dance and circle in the ring. Could he do that again with the Josecito Lopez? We saw him headbutt intentionally to Floyd Mayweather. Could he do something like that to Lopez after being frustrated when he sees the kid doesn't go anywhere? If he lands a big punch and if Lopez is able to handle it and suck it in and absorb it, what does Victor Ortiz do from there? That's why I think this fight puts a lot of interest. And not only this, is that we have Henry Ramirez and Josecito Lopez scheduled to be on at 7 o'clock here on Leaving in the Ring. We have Robert the Ghost Guerrero at 5:15, and we have James Coward, the coach that was on ESPN, Rick James Coward on ESPN. We'll talk a little bit about that. He's calling in at 6 o'clock here on Leaving Ring to discuss what happened on Friday nights. But going back with Henry, when I spoke to him, he said, listen, the fight with Kendall Holt was originally offered to us, but we're getting Victor Ortiz. And that's just a big step up. They understand that. They understand that's a huge leap from Kendall Holt to Victor Ortiz. And this is an opportunity to shine. This is an opportunity to really kind of fit his name into the other elite fighters that are out there and available at 147 or even at 140.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's exactly what Alex was talking about. He's like, look, you want to be at the next level, dude, then here it is. Now is the time. Take your shot, and let's do this thing, you know. And I like that attitude. I like that style. You know, it's just like, all right, we're gonna take a calculated risk here. And Alex is one of the better matchmakers in the sport. He's kind of an unsung guy. He's a guy that brought along Tim Bradley. I think Josecito might actually be their publicist, Marilyn Aceves, was telling me this yesterday, that he's their first signing over at Thompson. He's a guy that they've really developed over the years. And now, you know, he's on the precipice of something big. If he can pull the upset and beat Victor Ortiz, I mean, you know, Victor Ortiz isn't like a classic household name, but beating him is huge. You know,
yeah.
And it signals that he belongs. It's his first welterweight fight. It's exciting. It's going to be a good night at the fights. And Golden Boy really bounced back, and then they added, you know, Chris Arriola. That was really, it was nice. And you know, to tie it into the whole drug testing thing, you know, there was that big fight about how Lamont Peterson and that team waited like 3 weeks, and then there was arguments about a signed contract or not a signed contract. All that stuff, you know, and I'm not going to take a side on it, but I think we're seeing like the growing pains and then like, how they responded to the second time. But the real lesson here, I think, with this, is that every camp, if you look at like all the anti-doping stuff, I think we got a couple minutes before they come on. Every camp handles like getting an A-side positive differently. Some people will test that B sample immediately. Some people, like Ryan Braun, for instance, will go into litigation or arbitration, never even touch that B sample, but have a whole other legal argument. In his case, it was chain of custody or chain of custody of collecting the sample and moving it along. They attacked that, and they won, and they got away with it. The Lamont Peterson's people waited 3 weeks to tell anybody, got too close to the fight, and then kind of revealed, and it was too late. And it might have been actually they could have stepped things up and maybe saved that fight. But you know, that was one way. And then Al Haymon, when he got the A sample notice at 8:30 in the morning, he on Saturday, May 12th, he called Richard Schaefer later that evening after kind of, you know, probably marshaling his forces, figuring out what he wanted to do, and then he let Richard Schaefer know that same day, and they were able to save this thing. The way it looks right now, Mr. Schaefer told me at the press conference that he's only going to be using USADA testing. Well, he didn't say exclusively. He said we're working on a deal to do USADA testing in the future. From what I understand, they have no interest in doing VADA testing. It's according to another source. So, summation, I think it's very strange. VADA is 2 out of 3 right now. They tested 3 fights. They've caught 2 people. USADA has tested 3 fights. They haven't caught anybody. And I'm not saying they're inferior. I'm just saying, why would you not go with the people that have the better track record? I mean, I think maybe it's an infrastructure thing. I had a couple of people mention that to me with VADA. But I don't think in this case that that's actually true. I think that's spin. VADA was not obligated to tell them, in my opinion, from what I understand, about this positive. Now, should they? That's another question. I mean, if you get to that three-week period and you realize the guy that tested positive, because this is different than other sports, it's going to be harder to, like they did with this card, realign it, move the date, or keep the date, but, you know, add different people, depending on who's available. I mean, you know, Moses Seifert wouldn't have been available unless Kendall Holt dropped out of their fight. It was a perfect storm for them that they were able to save it. I think maybe there should be a clause in there that if it's starting to get long and it gets, like, to a certain threshold, you know, close to the fight, like this is as far, like 3 weeks out, this is as close as we can get, then maybe there should be a clause where VADA says, you know what, I got to reveal, guys, sorry, but you're going to cost them money and put us in a legal bind.
Right.
I think that's what should happen. I don't think you throw the baby out with the bathwater, though. I think VADA testing is proven to be very effective. Even with me writing articles saying exactly what tests they were going to do, they still caught people for what I was talking about. So I think it's very strange, and I think it's a bad move, in my opinion, to go back to the USADA. I think I would stick with VADA because they're working, and they're cheaper. But we'll talk more about that because we have another guest tonight at 6:30, Damian Ramirez, the advisor to Winky Wright. We'll discuss that as well as he also represents Josie Alusagun, and he'll give us the latest on what's going on with the WBC, once again bypassing him. He's the mandatory to Danny Garcia, but instead Danny Garcia is going to be fighting Amir Khan in what they hope will be a triple unification match. So there's a lot going on tonight.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff. You know, we even got like Carl Froch versus Lucian Bute. That's going to be a great match happening on Saturday on Epic Channel. We touched a little bit on it on Friday, late Friday night. Still want to talk about it here. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You certainly can. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gabriel Montoya. And also, too, I want to congratulate my co-host and my partner here on Leaving the Ring. He's the new editor for the, what is it, for Southern California or just for LA for boxing scene?
For Los Angeles, yeah.
For
and
Los
surrounding
Angeles.
Areas, I guess. SoCal. Yeah. I mean, not all the way down to San Diego, but LA and its surrounding areas for boxing scene. My primary job is still Max Boxing. You know, I'm one of the senior writers there along with Steve Kim, who's the senior writer. I will not stop doing that. And really, just to let you guys know, all the drug stuff that I'm writing, all the boxing drug war or combat sports drug war, all that stuff will be on Max Boxing, just to keep it straight. If you're looking for the drug stuff and other things, I have a couple of features coming out, Benavidez and Jose Aguadniga, I think I'm mispronouncing his name, who fight this weekend. I'll have features on them this week, but all that stuff will be on Max Boxing. All the regular stuff, kind of news and notes kind of things, will be on Boxing Scene. You can look for me on both. So. And some stuff in the UK is coming up too. I'm writing something for Boxing News, and it's been crazy, Dave. But
yeah.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you for the congratulations. It's been a lot of hard work, and you've been right there with me, helping me. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm getting a text right now from Mara Serrano, who is the publicist for Robert the Ghost Guerrero, saying he's calling in right now. Actually, I think we got Robert with us right now. The Ghost from Gilroy, California, represents all of the Bay Area. What's up, brother? How you doing? You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring.
All right. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good, bro. It's been a minute since we've talked.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a while. I've been out. Now I'm back.
Now you're back. First off, man, how's the family? How's everybody doing?
Family's doing great. Everybody's doing good. Everybody's excited for the next fight coming up.
You know, before we talk about your upcoming fight that's happening at the HP Pavilion in San Jose, which you're jumping up two weight divisions to try to claim a title at the 147 weight division and in hopes of getting that dream match that you've been asking for a minute. Let me ask you, how have you reacted and how have you felt how some of the media and fans have kind of turned against you when you were calling out Floyd Mayweather and Victor Ortiz at the time?
I don't trip off that. I've always got that fans kind of always talking that I'm, you know, not ready for these guys or what. But you know what? That's the time when I shine. You know, that's when I step up and show everybody up. So. You know, I'm, you know, I'm kind of happy that, you know, some of the fans are kind of turning against me because, you know, that actually motivates me even more, makes that fire burn, makes you want to get out there and show all these people, you know, what you're really about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because, you know, first off, you came out, you know, the great story, you know, it just seemed like a lot of folks embraced everything that you were going through, you know, what your wife was going through, but then it just kind of flip-flopped automatically. You know, it became that you were the bad guy, you know, because you were kind of wanting to jump and challenge yourself. Did that kind of throw you back where you're like, well, isn't that what I'm supposed to do? Am I not supposed to challenge myself? Am I not supposed to ask for ridiculous things to see whether or not I can step up to the plate?
Oh, yeah, you know, that's what boxing's about, is that challenge and becoming the best fighter you can be. And, you know, by taking tuna fights, you know, softer fights that you know you can win, you know, it don't get you nowhere. It don't get you nowhere. So, you know, I'm looking for the best challenge. You know, I had a lot of the fans, you know, and the media, mainly the media, talking that, you know, that I'm just looking for that big fight to cash out. And, you know, Floyd Mayweather is that biggest fight. You know, a lot of people think I was crazy, you know, going to jump up two weight classes to fight at 147 and challenge Floyd Mayweather coming off a shoulder injury. You know, I'm always about pushing myself and testing myself and looking for the best fight out there and giving the fans the best fight out there. And, you know, you get all these so-called experts that, you know, they just talk and talk, but, you know, they don't look at the facts. And when you look at all the facts, you know, throughout my career, you know, I've won five championships in three different weight classes. And as I go up in weight, I get even better. So, you know, you get these experts that don't look at the facts and, you know, facts, they don't lie. So, you know, you can't argue against facts.
You know, I have a follow-up. And I think you're going to ask this too. I'm not sure. I might be taking your question away from you. But
if you do, you're fired.
Okay, Robert. What I was going to say was that I think what I saw, and this is my personal opinion here, you know, and I could be wrong about this, but what I saw from fight fans and speaking to numerous different fight fans and numerous different people in the media business was they felt kind of short-ended because the Madonna fight fell apart because of the shoulder injury, but then immediately there was no call for a rematch for the Madonna. I mean, there was no reschedule of that Marcos Chino Madonna fight, you know, and folks kind of felt like you left that with unfinished business there. And why didn't you go after that? Oh, this is the reason why he's ducking him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What is your response to something like that?
Come on, man. If you're looking for the best fight, what are you going to fight? A Madonna or Floyd Mayweather? Both fights are available. Which one are you going to take? You're going to take the Floyd Mayweather fight. You know, he had that date open for May 5th, and it was undecided who he was going to fight. Hey, you know what? Why not jump in the ring with the best fighter in the world, pound for pound, so you can become the best fighter in the world? You know, so, that was the decision of shooting for Floyd Mayweather and trying to get that best fight up. You know, who's better to, you know, make a statement against, Maidana or Floyd Mayweather?
Well, I'm just being devil's advocate. This is Gabe Montoya, Max Boxing. Robert, welcome to the show, man. I'm doing good, man. I'm not going to try to ever stop somebody from trying to be great. And I think, you know, one, sure, it's, you know, you have a limited time to make money. So, yeah, of course it's about giant payday. But it's also about trying to be great and take on the best guy. That said, you know, every weight class that you've won a title in, you kind of, you know, dip your toe by taking out a few guys at that weight class and, like, acclimating your body as you move up. What made you so confident that you could just go straight to 147? What in the gym showed you, or what was it that made you say, you know what, I can not only take on the best fighter in the world, but I can do it two weight classes above where I've won my last title?
You know what, styles make fights, man, and I got the style. You know, going up to 147, it's just that much better, you know, not having to lose the extra 15 pounds to 135. You know, you could go in there full strength, 100%. And like I said, you know, I'm looking for the best fights. I'm looking for the best fights out there, and I want to make it happen. You know, I've you know, people are like, why are you skipping 140? Well, everybody from 35 is going to 40, and nobody wanted to fight me on 35, so why even waste the time? Just go straight to 47 and let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, anybody that's trying to be great, it's kind of, it's not really my job to say, hey, don't do that, you know. I think the thing that, honestly, and Mario's probably listening, and he'll get mad at me for saying it, but but it's true. You guys just sent so many press releases out. I think people, because you lobbied so hard, you know how it is. It's like a diminishing returns kind of thing after a while. And I think that's what it was. I don't think people, I don't see how people could be pissed at you, you know.
Pretty much, if you look at it, Mario's doing his job.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line. Mario's doing his job, and you know what? We're campaigning for that fight, so we're going to push hard for it. Hey, we're going to make it happen or what? So, you know, it's not just throw out there, oh, I want to fight Floyd Mayweather. Hey, well, you know what? We want to fight him, and this is why we want to fight him, and we're going to state all the facts why we want to fight him and why the fight's going to be good.
Sure, I can understand that. Well, let's get into the present here. And I'll jump back to something else, but I know you don't like to look past this. But let's talk about this guy, the Selkirk Aiden. You kind of got what you wanted. You wanted a high-level welterweight fight. You're going for the interim WBC welterweight title. What do you know of Selkirk? What do you think about Selkirk?
You know, he's a tough guy. I mean, I've been watching a lot of tape on him. You know, he comes to fight. I mean, he comes to fight every time he comes. You know, he puts a lot of pressure, hard puncher. You know, the majority of his fights are knockouts. I mean, he has 18 knockouts out of 29 fights. You know, you got some cracking power. You know, the one thing a lot of people do is they underestimate, you know, guys from overseas. And, you know, that's one thing you got to take in consideration, that this guy got some punching power. And there's a reason why he's been the number one contender in the WBC for the last 2 years, and nobody's willing to take on the challenge.
Yeah, seriously. For you, was it a matter of best option, or how did that come along? How did this fight come to you?
You know, the fight came up. You know, he's the number one challenger to Floyd Mayweather. So, you know, take the fight with him. You know, it's for the WBC interim championship of the world. It makes me the mandatory to fight Floyd Mayweather. And, you know, when you get into that mandatory spot, what are you going to say now? You know,
right.
you're looking for something else. So, I mean, you know, when you're that mandatory, you know, well, what can you say about a mandatory? Hey, let's make it happen.
Well, later on this evening, we'll talk about what a WBC mandatory, a Jose Alusagon, who's been waiting 2 years as the number one contender to fight whoever had that belt. Tim Bradley had it. Somebody else had it. Now Danny Garcia has it, and he's fighting Amir Khan. I mean, I actually like the positioning, and I like the thought process, though. You know, you got to force his hand, and if he doesn't take the fight, then you have a nice case. Now, speaking of guys that have called you out, Paulie Malignaggi called you out. Then he went off, and he won a belt at welterweight. WBA, nobody gave him a shot, and he went out and he stopped this guy. Not looking past Selkirk, but do you feel like you got a little unfinished business with him if, say, Floyd doesn't materialize right off the bat?
Oh, yeah. You know, you, like I said, you're going to look for the best fights out there, the best fights that are available at the time. And, you know, he's a world champion. Hey, you know what? Win that WBC interim title, hey, it's time to unify and make it happen. If Floyd doesn't want to, you know, step in the ring when he gets out, then, you know, you're going to look for that next best fight. So, you know, there's always unfinished business with every fighter you're going to go up against, or everybody that's in the weight class. So, you know, you just got to be prepared and ready for all the challenges that are going to come your way.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that. I mean, you know, Robert, it's nice to have you back, man. It's just I haven't talked to you in so long, you know. And what do you do during these long kind of breaks? You know, you've been off since, what, last April. You know, how have you been staying in shape, and what have you been working on in the lab, you know, known as your boxing gym?
Just spending time with my family, taking advantage of it, because, you know, once I'm back in that ring, you know, I want to start rock and rolling. I don't want to waste no time. I want to make it happen. You know, look for the best fights out there. But, you know, in the meanwhile, while I was off, you know, just staying sharp, staying in the gym, you know, working on a bunch of different little things, movements here and there, you know, working on my right arm. You know, the left arm was, you know, doing all the physical training on that and just,
right.
you know, getting everything 100% ready to rock and roll. So, you know, most of the time it's just chilling and spending time with the family.
Do you kind of go through, I don't know when you started training again, but do you kind of, you're waiting for a fight, is there kind of a peak and then a little bit of valley? I mean, do you taper off, like, you know, you train 3 months, you're waiting, nothing happens, and you got to kind of rest? How does that all work for you? Or do you just kind of keep an even keel and keep working out throughout?
Well, for one, I mean, I never stop training. I'm always in the gym. You know, this is my job. This is what I do. It's my livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So,
sure.
You know, I stay in shape all the time, stay prepped out, ready to go. But you got to know when to push and when to pull back so you don't overwork.
Right.
You know, you want to hit, you want to peak, you know, fight night. You don't want to overwork
right.
and leave everything in the gym. So, you know, there's a time when you push and there's a time when you have to pull back. And, you know, that's one thing I work with, you know, me and my father is, you know, we know each other real good. And he knows when I'm overworking or when I'm starting to get a little too crazy where he'd just be, you know, he's that jockey on my back, you know. When we're running that race, he's the one that got to pull the, you know, he got to pull the reins back and slow me down sometimes. So, you know, it's just knowing what you got to do and how much you got to do to be 100% ready for when you walk in that ring, you know, you're 100% and you're fresh and your body's ready to go.
You know, getting back into the HB Pavilion where, you know, obviously the Marcos Madonna fight was selling out rapidly. It, you know, had a huge buzz. A lot of people from the Bay Area were ready to probably even camp out to get in line to get into that fight there, you know. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to go to the presser. I've been to all your pressers when you're going to fight, you know, Rob. And I couldn't do it. I got really, really sick. So I'm going to definitely make it to the next one. But do you feel like you have to be very impressive to maybe gain back some of the fans that kind of turn their backs on you? I mean, is there a lot of pressure, do you feel, on yourself right now? Because leading into 147, it is two weight divisions jumping up, and even with folks that were saying, you just came off an injury. I mean, you were calling out one of the best fighters in the world without even testing if your shoulder was completely healed. How do you feel? What stage right now in your mind do you need to put yourself in the presentation to the fans?
Oh, I got to come out and shine, man. I got to come out and make a huge statement, you know, especially coming off that shoulder injury. You're only as good as your last fight, and, you know, my last fight didn't go through. You know, I had the shoulder injury, and, you know, it's time to come out and show, especially all the critics that were out there saying, oh, you know, Guerrero's just looking to cash in or what. You know, hey, I'm going to take on the toughest guy that's in line. So, you know, I got to go out there, me and my team, and we got to make it happen. I got to go make a statement, a huge statement, especially jumping up two weight classes and fighting for the WBC championship of the world. You know, you got to make that statement, especially if you're campaigning for that Floyd Mayweather fight. Hey, you want to leave people drooling and starving for more to get in that ring with Floyd Mayweather. So, you know, we got to go out there and make it happen. This guy, we got to destroy him.
Wow.
Isn't
that the weirdest thing in the world to you? Like, you know, when you had the Dwight Jordan fight and you got the cut and everybody was like, oh, Robert doesn't like his own blood. And then the next fight, you get cut and you're like, no, let's fight through this shit. And you win. And then this
oh,
one,
yeah. I
it's like everybody jumped to conclusions.
Talk.
Yeah. Everybody jumped to conclusions. Oh, Robert's trying to cash out. Your career has never been about taking the shortcut. Like, nothing about your life has been about taking the shortcut. Why do people turn like that? Is it just knee-jerk reaction? They've never been a fighter and they don't understand? Or what do you think?
I think because boxing fans are the greatest fans in the world and they let nothing slide by. Where they know it's a rough, ruthless sport and, you know, they want to see the roughest, toughest get out there and fight. And, you know, if they don't get what they want, hey, you know, they're hard. They're hard on everybody. So,
yeah.
You know, that's why you got to go out there every time and make it happen. Be ready for that dogfight. So, you know, there's always going to be those critics out there. But you know, that's what drives you also is, you know, when you're game like the way I am and the way my family has been raised, we've been raised to work hard, show people up, especially the doubters. And, you know, that's what we're going to do.
That's true, because yeah, the last time I went to go see you, your dad tried to put me to work too, you know? Hey, go pick up that cement over there.
They're like Raiders fans. They make Raiders fans actually look kind of, in the black hole, look tame. You're right. Yeah. You know, they want it all.
And you know, the funny thing about that is you'll see my dad in the black hole.
That's funny.
You know, yeah. Robert,
you see my dad walking through the black hole, you'll see people moving out of the way.
That I believe.
Oh man, I've seen your dad and your uncles in action, so I can vouch for that, man.
Yeah, you see those guys, man. Especially you know, our family are big Raider fans, and man, you know, the way the fans are, you know, the way they're raised, the way they go, you know, that, I mean, it's same way with boxing fans. You know, they're pretty much like, they're all Raider fans, so you know,
right.
They're ruthless and you know, they don't let up. But you know,
yeah.
you got to keep on going out there, doing your job, working hard. You know, putting out what they love to see, and you know, but also being smart about it and getting your job done.
That's all truth there. You know, I mean, boxing fans, they love you hard and they hate you hard all at once. You know,
it's like that first love, man. There's that fine line between love and hate, and that's the way boxing fans are. There's that fine line between, you know. Where they're hardcore gonna love you and they're hardcore gonna just be on you, drooling on you. So, you know, that's why I say boxing fans are the best, man. There's no other fans like boxing fans.
Adrian's an undefeated fighter. He's obviously a confident guy. He's gonna come all the way down to San Jose, California, to keep his title. How do you break a guy that's undefeated? You know, because there are fans out there. They go, okay, you hack Casitas. But Casitas is an open guy. He's a guy that's willing to go into the trenches. You're meeting a guy that has a bigger confidence. You know, he's more rounded. What do you do there? And how do you break down a guy at 147, which is a division you have not messed around in?
You know, one thing, you know, quoting Floyd Mayweather, skills pay the bills. You know, you got to put all your skills together. You got to put everything together. You got to be smart. You got to go out there being in tremendous shape, and you got to be mentally sharp also, because you know, he is one of those guys that if you're not 100% ready and you overlook him, he's going to break you down. I mean, you know, he's a very, very, very you know, hard punching guy that puts a tremendous, tremendous amount of pressure and has a tight defense. So you know, especially with a guy that has a tight defense and just a straight pressure fighter. With punching power, you know, you got to be ready for him. So, you know, you got to put all your skills together. You got to have a great game plan going in. You got to be mentally focused, and you got to be ready to go all 12 rounds, you know, on your game every second of the round.
If the shoulder doesn't hold up, do you got a plan B? I mean, let's be realistic. You don't hurt it. We don't know yet. You don't know yet if it's going to hold up, if it can be re-injured. Have you guys thought of put any thought into that?
Well, you know, once I got the corrective surgery done, you know, I was right back in the gym. And the number one thing I've been working with was my jab. You know, I had one good hand to work with, and you know, that's what I went to extreme measures is working on my jab. And you know, somebody with a great jab is really, really hard to beat. And you know, hey. When you got a great jab, and if the other shoulder goes out, you know, that's your plan B. Work that jab and you know, stay on it. Stay on it and you know, get the job done.
I got one last question for you, Robert, and I'll let you go.
But everybody's going to be surprised when they see me walking that ring at 47.
I can't wait to see you. You know, I can't wait to see you get back into the ring, especially in my hometown of San Jose, you know, which is probably a few blocks away from the house where I grew up at, you know, and I'm excited, man. I know a lot of, you know, Bay Area riders out there are excited to see you get back in the ring, you know, because you represent the Bay very well, very well. But I got to throw you another tough question, and I know you're going to answer this. You beat Adrian for a trinkle of a bout that's in this soup division of belts, and some fans are going to say, if you beat him and on a decision, so what? You don't deserve a Floyd Mayweather. If you knock him out early, so what? You fought a guy that nobody knew. Is it safe to say that maybe Floyd Mayweather, maybe you should get, now having the title, you have the opportunity to maybe get somebody that's close to a Floyd Mayweather before trying to step up and challenge him?
I mean, you know, when you're the mandatory, you're the mandatory. You're either going to fight or you're leaving your title behind. So, you know, regardless, if I knock him out, or if I go the distance with him and you still get that, like I said, I'm looking for the best fights out there. You know, whether it's Floyd Mayweather or not, I'm going to fight the best. So, you know, until then, you know, we're going to focus on Nadine, and we're going to train hard and blow this dude out, because this is the stepping stone that puts you into that big fight. So, you know, that's all the focus is right now, and the rest of it, just leave it to my management and promotion team.
Well, there you go. Robert the Ghost Guerrero representing the Bay. He's got a fight coming up at the HP Pavilion in San Jose, California. Be sure to go out, buy your tickets, support your boy, support my boy, Robert the Ghost. His whole family, the Guerrero family, man, are just, they're great all-around people. Don't be intimidated by them, man. They're going to love you hard. And if you're a hater, they're going to hate you hard at the same time, man. But, hey, Robert, man, it's always fun, brother, when we get you on here on Leaving the Ring. I can't wait to see you. I was telling Mario to let me know when is a good day for me to go down over there and kick back with you and watch you train and get ready for this fight happening in June. Hey, again, man, say hi to everybody in the fam for me.
Heck yeah, all right. Hey, you know what? Thanks for having me on, guys. You know what? It's on July 28th. We're going to go take care of business. Everybody's going to be in for a shocker. So, you know, I think people are going to be drooling after this fight to see me fight Mayweather.
There you go. Robert the Ghost Guerrero. All right, brother. You take care.
All right. You too. Bye.
We want fireworks happening July 28th. Did I say June by accident? July 28th at the HP Pavilion in San Jose, California. If you haven't been to San Jose, come on down, man. Everybody's, you know, very friendly. Just stay out of the hood. It's like the backyard, you know, Gabe. You got to come down too. You know, I'll take you where I grew up at in downtown San Jose. I love San Jose. It's every time I leave Modesto or anywhere else, I go back to the Bay. I love the smell. You could feel the breeze from the ocean coming down from San Francisco. It's there's nothing like it, man. There's nothing like the Bay Area.
I dig the. I didn't realize I was on mute. I'm all, bye, Robert. See you later. I'm not kidding at all. But thanks for coming on, champ, if you're still listening. It was awesome. And Mario Serrano, don't get mad at me for what I said. I'm just doing my job. I'm just observing people. I'm thinking about coming up for that one. You know, that's actually the beautiful thing about now working for B-Scene is I have a little more money to go travel now and see certain fights that I want to see. I think that's going to be a really good fight. Robert is always exciting. That's the thing that I kind of – like, even I was like, okay, this is overkill, like – you know, either Floyd's going to do it or he's not. You know, Floyd doesn't do anything that, you know, that Floyd doesn't want to do. But I understood his position, and I didn't think it was fair for fans. Like, they were mad at the publicist. Like, he's doing his job, like Robert said. Don't get mad at the fighter for wanting to be great and wanting to fight the best. I mean, you guys get mad at Manny Pacquiao and Floyd for not wanting to fight each other. You can't have it both ways. You can't denigrate a guy who goes, you know what, I have no problem fighting the best person in the world. Kind of harsh to kind of denigrate him like that. And Robert's always given everything that he could to this sport. Obviously, you know, his story with his wife, and this is not even a story, it's the reality of his life, shows what kind of character this man has. So,
right.
You know, I'd like to go up there and support him, and definitely I'd like to chill with you in the Bay Area. So we'll see what's up.
Absolutely. And I see, you know, that Mauricio Herrera and Brandon Rios are looking to mix it up at 140. That's another great match. I don't, you know, I like the fact that he's moving up 5 pounds in weight, and he's facing a really tough opposition, Mauricio Herrera. You know, we'll get him up. We'll get him on Leaving the Ring really soon, and hopefully we can get them both, and we can talk to them a little bit about boxing. I like a lot of the answers that Robert said, you know, but you know, I got to go back with that. I think some of the statements or arguments that some of the fight heads out there had about Robert the Ghost Guerrero was the shoulder injury, and, you know, coming off of it, you haven't proven – or not, if it's going to hold up. And I think having this match come up on July 28th at the HB Pavilion is a good test to see whether or not if he's in good condition. That is the big concern for fight fans out there, especially the followers of the Ghost from Gilroy, California. And, you know, it's one of those discussions, you know, it's either you're going to agree or disagree, but you got to all agree on that. This is a tough kid. You know, he's a tough kid,
yeah.
And he's going to come to fight regardless of what other folks are going to do. He's not going to melt down. It's not going to fall apart. And I know some folks were like, what do you mean? He melted down when he fought Jordan. He did it. You know, and if you remember, the medical doctor, the ring doctor, asked him, can you see? And he answered him with an honest question, which was, no, I can't see yeah. out of that eye. And it fell apart from there, you know, and heat of the moment type of stuff. Could it be something he could have taken back? I think he's in that thought and that process at that moment. Yeah. After what the outcome was, I think he was in the process in his mind saying, why did I even say that? You know, it's like one of those things you blurt out by accident and you go like, God, that was stupid for me to say, you know, and those moments, we all have them, you know, but unfortunately everybody's watching when it comes to these guys, these fighters' careers, we're all watching the seconds. They're being counted down in their lives and in their fights, and unfortunately, we're able to point out the hiccups that they do. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. See, the switchboard is filling up with a lot of people wanting to talk 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. Hey, Gabe, let's pass in some fight fans. We got a friend of ours here that's he's right now listening, wants to talk boxing here, and we always have him waiting maybe, you know, 2 hours, and he waits very patient here on Leaving the Ring. Frank the Man, what's up, brother? How you doing? You're all live right now on Leaving the Ring.
You guys caught me every 20 minutes in some good shit.
Hey, didn't I tell you that I was going to hook you up? I said, okay, man. All right, I'm going to get you on earlier. How you doing, brother?
I don't know if it was you or me threatening your screener. I don't know which one it was. I was like, listen, mother, if you don't put me on, Gabe said it was cool. I'm VIP on the show. You should have heard me. I just had like a jerk. Oh, man. This show
That's
is great,
fun.
Man. I'm glad you guys are having it. How's it going, Gabe? David, what's
good.
Up?
It's going good.
That interview with Robert Guerrero was classic. I'm down with Robert Guerrero. I'm not definitely one of the haters. But seriously, would you pay to see him watch Fight Floyd?
Well, I mean, people bought
That's a no. How about David?
People bought the Marquez fight. I said that was
Marquez
a sham.
Marquez is a warrior. Come on. But he has
a fun he's a tiny
Marquez
warrior.
Has.
He's a tiny
he
warrior.
He doesn't
I mean,
have half the resume on Marquez's side. And
you
guys
I mean,
really think...
That's true. You know, my always thing, I don't know if you listened when we were, this was like a hot topic, and my thing was always like, I want to see him at 140 or 147 to see what the goods are before the consumer can really go buy it. So,
right.
You know, but having him on here, we were arguing with his manager, we were arguing with the publicist, we never really got to debate it with Robert, and hearing his reasons, it's kind of like, you know what, I'm never going to tell a guy to not try to be great. You know, that's what I told him. You know, it's I'd rather hear it from him. If he believes it, it's kind of up to him. Whether or not you can sell it, that's kind of an argument to have with the promoter and the manager. And say, is this
absolutely
something
is.
You really
I would,
could
you know
sell?
What I would
you
definitely want to see? I would like to see a headline HBO Showtime card rematch Kirkland and El Perro. Let's get Canelo Alvarez and Paul Williams. I'm a fan of that fight. I don't know why. I think Canelo, the cinnamon girl, is going to be a golden girl, is going to come out swinging. That's what I'm going to call him from now on, Cinnamon Golden Girl. That's my nickname to him. seriously, I'm tired of Golden Girl promotions, period, all of them, every one of them, that Hungarian bastard. I want to see that fight, and then I want to see Morales and Marquez. It's the only fight Marquez is ducking big time right now. Morales is in weights. He has no business fighting Maidana now that he's gone to Garcia. That's already done. We saw a war with him with that. But give us Marquez and Morales. I'll be a stoked boxing fan, especially for how much everybody's been fucking up in boxing lately. Seriously, it's been out of control.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of upset the way the situation has been died down a little bit. Like even every boxing website out there, it's kind of tamed it down. You know what? These fools need to be outed, every one of them. Every one of them. I'm so happy they're drug testing. Chocolate face. I mean, Kid Chocolate. He was pulling. Wow. Seriously, because that fool's on something for sure. Chocolate Fizz.
I like that.
You guys tell you feel these phone calls every week, man. I got one of my boys that can only listen to you guys on Monday, man. His name's Ernie Zott. Big up motherfucker since high school. But listen, every Monday he calls me up and he goes, dude, I heard you on that show. Those dudes gotta love you. I'm like, I'm waiting for them to text message me. Don't ever call again.
No, man. We love everybody that calls in and talks boxing here with us. That's the whole reason why we started this show, so we can get the opinions of everybody else. You know, that's what it's all about, you know?
Absolutely. And getting a raw opinion with somebody with some nuts and not trying to kiss somebody's ass about shit, seriously, is what this sport needs. It'll get us back to the top. And honestly, the other game that's always trying to put up a show against ours, seriously, I saw your show last week. You sons of bitches suck. And Daniel Cormier, I don't want to even tell you, but you're a boxer, and you're beating up these half-ass motherfuckers out there, and the dude was my boy who he beat. So all I got to say is this. If you're boxing, box. Kimbo Slice versus Evander Holyfield. How about that one?
Oh.
Wow. Oh, my God. Just laugh. Was
you
that
know,
not funny? But you want to see fun. It. He's doing good. Every
well,
time
know,
somebody cheers in MMA for a knockout, guess what, stupids? It's boxing.
Yeah.
I hate that. They're like, oh, boxing's horrible. It's like every time you score a knockout in MMA, you just rooted for boxing, you idiot.
Exactly. Oh no, that's one thing that they will never admit. They're never going to cop to, you know. And that's a discussion that they just don't want to go into. You know what I mean? I've had that plenty of times. I've mentioned that, but it's just one of those things that one of those alleyways they just don't want to go down. Hey
yeah.
Frank, gotta tell you, brother, thanks for calling in. We're gonna put you back on hold. We gotta patch in some other fights.
All right, Ben, you guys are in Orange County, man. Come check out the club tonight. It's ladies' night. Bring some ladies. Your first drink's on me.
Tonight?
All right, brother. Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. I'll get out there. That's, you like just said, like my meeting call, ladies' night. I'll get out there, Frank. I'll get out there one of these days. I promise. All right, man.
I'm really, really pumped up about is Boutte and Frotch. I know a lot of here in the States, not a lot of folks are talking about it. I love
they
aren't. The fight. Yeah, they're not really giving it a whole lot of love. I like this fight. You know, I think, too, when I say not a whole lot of love, not even my writers are even putting up any ink on this. And this is a fight that I think fight fans, too, need to kind of tap into and look out. This is a very competitive fight. This is going to be a really good fight, man.
I don't know who's going to win. I got to be honest. Ben Satterfield probably sent me about 10 emails asking me to make a pick for the ring. You know, I'm like undefeated. I think Steve and I are both undefeated in our fight picks. He's kind of excited about that. And, you know, I don't really put a lot of stock in fight picks. Most people, it's like a slippery slope. You end up like, if you're wrong, then dude remembers it for the next 30 years.
Right.
You know, yeah, but you got this one fight wrong. You're not an expert. So I kind of more often than I don't like to do fight predictions, but we do them on the show. But I don't put a lot of stock in them. But this fight, I think when you can't make a prediction, that's a sign of a great fight. I think this could be a knockdown dragout war. We're gonna find out a lot about Boutte. I've always said, you know, I'm not sure if he's the best 168 pounder in the world or one of them, because he didn't do the Super Six, and he doesn't have the resume of the other guys. So now we get to find out what he's got. And we get to find out against a tough guy like Frotch. And I think it's a nice matchup.
This is a really nice matchup, I like exactly what you said, because those are the thoughts that I had in my head, is that, you know, one thing, Frotch brings the power, but he has an educated jab. He's been really a student of the game of learning how to use his jab. He has a real awkward type of style. He's a style that you can either time perfectly and be able to outbox him, or he has a style where you're not going to be able to time perfectly, and he's going to catch you with one of those big looping power punches that he does throw. You know, Boutte's got power and he's got speed. He's got some crushing body shots that he likes to land, and he stopped a lot of his foes in the past. How well is Frotch going to be able to take a guy that can really, really put a lot behind in a body shot? This is a great match. These are the kind of matches that we do need. I think Showtime dropped the ball by not picking up this match and paying for this match, because this is going to be a fan-friendly TV match all the way. Fight fans, want to call in 347 215-7598. We're going to have our next guest come on in about six more minutes. But let's pass in some fight fans really quick, Gabe. What do you think?
Let's do that.
Let's get a... Oh, look, we got somebody that wants to talk, Butte and Frotch. Norman is on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
What's going on, guys? It's good to talk to you guys again.
Doing good, brother. Hello? Doing good. Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah. Given my luck, of course, this fight is only on Epix, and my computer died like 2 days ago. Right.
Oh, man.
Is there any way that, like, I could watch this fight with it without watching on Epix, or?
Well, I don't even know if you'll be able to watch it on Epix the way their streams work. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
I think you can watch it. I think Xbox. Do you have an Xbox?
Okay,
or an Xbox,
yeah.
The Xbox 360. I think on there, if you have Xbox Live, there's an app that you can download, and it's an Epix app, and you can watch it there. It's never worked for me. But then again, the other stream has never worked for me either. I mean, you know, there's other links, I think, that'll be available to it, but you'd need a computer again for that. That's one of the great tragedies I've heard in a long time, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's... Then I got another question, man. What's going on with this Manny Pacquiao guy, man? I'm watching 24/7. All I hear is, read the Bible, read the Bible, read the Bible. I say, that's great. And then I turn and he's doing fucking Hennessy commercials. Are you just like... The last time I checked, you don't drink Hennessy and then go home and read the Bible. You're like, what's going on?
I mean, Jesus did turn water into wine. I mean, Jesus was on tap at that wedding. So
yeah, I think the answer to that. I think we've all been to church where you hear the Reverend, a $100 bills, y'all, and put it in there. Reverend Cash, right? So
Reverend Cash.
I don't know. I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it 24/7. I didn't catch up with it.
I never watched it.
Yeah, you know what? I don't like mixing religion or politics with my boxing. You know, and if you know what? If that makes them feel better, go right ahead. And I'm pretty sure that Hennessy commercial made him feel a lot better when he got the paycheck. He got that check handed over him. So more power to you at the same time, you know. But as long as it doesn't push it in my face and try to make me, be super religious, I don't have a problem with it.
I mean, here's the thing. I mean, Manny's always been a very generous guy. I mean, the very first time I dealt with him, he literally moved people over and, like, filled the plate for me, and we sat after our interview. We didn't talk while we ate, but it was like he's a very sharing, caring guy. He's just gotten religion. He's really excited about it. I'm not gonna rain on his parade, but seriously, yeah. I mean, I unfollow people who do the I'm blessed, you know, the random thing. I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual person. I think there's only one true God. His name is love. And then we're all, you know, vibrations of the mind. That is the one true God. His name is love. But that said, that's probably the only time I've ever said that on the show, and I'll probably never say that again on the show. There's no place in sports, you know. I'm all about the universal, and I think we're all one. But, I mean, what does it have to do with you're going to beat up Tim Bradley? I mean, seriously. Has 24/7 just absolutely jumped the shark? I think so. I haven't watched it in like three versions. Like somebody forced me to watch the Mayweather Cotto thing, and it was like, 30-second or even like 3-sentence summary. I'm rich. I'm cocky. I'm Miguel Cotto. I'm very, very boring. We're going to fight. Show.
Hey Norm, really quick, man. I want to thank you for bringing back the Dark Cloud. It's been a minute since we haven't heard from him. And he definitely brought him back, you know.
Well, that was my intention.
don't get me started on religion. Yeah, don't get me started. I mean, it's like, come on, dude. I mean, I don't want to trash the guy too much, but you can't be like accused of cheating on your wife and gambling and cockfighting and all this other crap. And then like a few months later, I found religion, and that's the only thing that's going to come out of my mouth. Get out of here. Open an F in there too, you know? I mean, come on, man. I mean, that's great. You know, if you're saved, great. But it's just kind of sickening that they're making it into like a marketing ploy with him. you know, Manny the congressman who's now John the Baptist. You know, it's just, I mean, I don't know. You know, it just, don't get me started.
As long as he doesn't bring religion into the ring against Timothy Bradley, because religion is not going to save him from a guy that's going to be a whirlwind, and they call him the Desert Storm, because that's exactly what he's going to be on June 9th. Hey, Norm, thanks for calling in, brother. Put you back on hold, okay?
All right, take it easy, guys.
Hey, you too, man.
And that's all we needed was one caller. One caller to call in to bring the dark cloud out. That's it.
Just say religion, and I'm just like, you know, all right, let's talk religion. I don't know. My family's very diverse in this religion. Did we just board an airplane, or am I crazy?
that's a dark cloud, man.
Yeah, that's the dark cloud. That's hilarious. The sound effects, we've never done that before. Teach his own, you know, I don't, whatever. Just don't push it on me, but I just think it's weird. It's a weird storyline, and what bad timing to come out against gay marriage. Like, everybody's all up with Obama, and you're in Hollywood, dude. A lot of gay people run this town. It's an entertainment industry. A lot of gay folks, a lot of Jews, a lot of old bunnies, a lot of gays
all over the place, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah. I think there's even a few gay Jews, but, you know, I mean, there's all, it's a kind of an old network of people that, not even just the Jewish people, but just entertainment people, like passing it down to each other, a lot of nepotism. It's a very close, small community. You don't come in when you're kind of the flavor of the moment. I mean, even though it's been a couple of years, everybody loves down in Hollywood. You just don't know what to say. Be smarter than that, you know, and know where you are. I mean, be honest. If you're going to be a politician, you know, be honest, whatever. I mean,
honesty and politics?
Yeah, come on.
In the same room? No, never, never. But you know what? Let's talk a little bit about something. Before we bring in our next guest here. You know, in boxing, especially right now, of what has risen to the top and what we've seen and you know, what we've been in discussions about heavily in the boxing world, you know, we talk about corruption, bad judging, you know, PEDs, you know, and you know, just the overall of the darkness that sometimes boxing can have overwhelm a lot of fans and writers and devoted people that are into this sport. You sometimes, just for a minute, you actually find somebody that has some morals and has a heart. And we saw that on Friday Night Fights with Rick James Coward, the coach of Raymond Serrano, who right away caught that when he was fighting Kareem, the hard hitter Mayfield, and the reason why they call him the hard hitter, because the guy does have a punch of death, you know, and I've said that. Rick James Coward knew already that his guy was overmatched in the power department, and his boxing was not going to save him. And what he had taught him was not going to get him out of that situation. And he jumps on that canvas and he decides to do something that is very difficult to, I guess you would, I don't know how you would put it, you know, very difficult to make a huge decision like that, because one, this is your big stage. Two, this is a chance to show what type of a trainer you are. And three, you always want to see the best results come out of your fighter. But he saw the right things that night on Friday Night Fights. He saw that even though it was a big stage and everybody's watching and he may be judged, but he saw that his skills weren't, his training didn't help him out and was not going to get him out of that situation. And he did the right thing, which is try to stop it. But it was overruled by Serrano's father. And I want to applaud him for stepping up and understanding that not everything's got to be bad in boxing. Not every time you have to just shove your fighter out there and hope that you can have that comeback Arturo Gatti punch. Because not every fighter has that. I like the fact that he realized my kid is overmatched and I need to stop this before he gets even more damaged.
Yeah, he was getting the hell beat out of him. It was not a fight that was going to turn around, you know, and he recognized that, and it's one of those things where the father, you know, I don't want to project anything onto the guy, but he's living through his kid or whatever, but you're too close when you just, no, my son, you know, I don't want him to lose. You're emotionally attached. You're holding on too tight. And I think a good trainer has a little bit of that you know, this isn't really my kid. I care about this guy, and I got this guy's back. That's my job. But I'm not holding on so tight to the win and the hope for it that I put my guy in danger. That's a big part of the trainer's job, is pulling that guy out when the shit goes wrong. And everything was wrong. I mean, they didn't even take care of the kid. You know, it took forever. They're arguing. He's just standing there in a daze. Nobody helped him out. And Teddy Adler's kind of like, maybe that's what did it. And I think that's kind of throwing James Coward under the bus. He was doing his job, and the dad wouldn't let him do his job. And that's, you know, maybe that's some sort of rule we need to look at, is like, you know, one guy gets to make that call and nobody gets to overrule him. I don't know. There was a little bit of chaos there. So.
It was a little bit of chaos, you know. I mean, the stool, first off, was not put in, and that was because I want to, you know, get this, you know, cleared, is did James withheld that stool? Because I thought I heard him say he didn't put the stool in because he was calling the fight off, you know, off. But let's get him on. Let's really find out what happened that night with this chaos and what happened after the fight, and where things are leading now for Rick James Coward.
Hello.
Hello, Rick. What's up, brother?
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. You're here on live right now on Leaving the Ring Radio. I don't know if you've been listening, but I was giving a little bit of I wouldn't say it's a rant, a rave, actually, about you. Out of all the things that have happened in boxing, you know, we've seen so much stuff in boxing where the morality of the sport can sometimes go really just take a big dive. And,
right.
You know, there's things that people do, not just in the, not just trainers and promoters, but even media. I've seen it all. My co-host, Gabriel Montoya, who's on with us live right now, we both have seen it all. But sometimes there's a jewel. Sometimes there's a shed of light, you know, that cracks through that huge dark cloud or eclipse that reminds us that there are great and good people in this sport. And we saw that on Friday night fights. We saw your fighter was overmatched, overpowered, and you jumped on there to do the right thing, which was call it off.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I guess my first question is, because there was so much chaos and there was so much confusion that fight fans were kind of uncertain of what was going on. One of them was the stool. I thought I heard you say that you withheld the stool because you were calling the fight off, and that might have set up the confusion in the beginning of that ending round.
Right. Well, actually what happened was there was someone else in the corner. I'm just going to say it was the father's job was to bring the stool up in between rounds. And even though I was calling off the fight, you know, that was his job to bring it up there. But if you look at it again, I've watched the fight about 20 times over again. I actually grabbed the stool and brought it up when they were about 7 to 10 seconds in. So the stool was in the ring, but in all the confusion, and I don't even want to say confusion, because I had my mind set to stop the fight. And, you know, the father was against it, and so was the cut man. And so I went from being the trainer who should be calling the shots to all of a sudden now, you know, the father, you know, wanted to exert, you know, his feelings on the matter because it's his son, and decide that he didn't want the fight to be stopped. And, you know, from my perspective, you know, he got knocked down early in the third round, and I wasn't, you know, it didn't shake me anything. I've seen him in the gym, and I know how, you know, Raymond fights, and he's an excellent boxer. And, you know, my job is to make sure that he's okay in there. And when I saw that knockdown, you know, he basically crumbled. And I was watching him, and I really thought the referee was going to stop the fight, because it reminded me of when Paul Williams, you know, got caught by Sergio Martinez. And so right away, I'm like, oh, man, this, you know, this kid is hurt. I'm hoping the ref stops it, you know, and I'm not knocking the ref. The ref, you know, saw, he was probably shocked as I was that this kid mustered the energy to get up. And I, you know, he showed his toughness. He behaved like a fighter. He got to his feet, but he was still hurt. And when I saw his eyes, that was enough for me. I said, you know, he's 22 years old. He's got a long career ahead of him, and there was no way I was going to let him go out there and take a beating, because, you know, even though I saw that Kareem was a little bit tired, he got a little gas from the punches, I know Kareem's a finisher, and I knew he was going to come after him, and, you know, I just didn't feel he had the ability to defend himself properly, and I just didn't want to see him get hurt.
When you mentioned what the referee, you know, and you know, thinking that he was going to stop it, but he allowed it to be continued. You know, seeing, you know, Raymond walk away to that corner. You know, as fight fans, we always want to see that will. Can he come back? That big story, that Rocky Balboa moment. Can he make a comeback? Can he push himself back to that other extra limit and turn the tables? You know, but sometimes enough is just enough. And when you saw the kid come back to the corner, and you're looking at his face. At what moment, even though he hit the canvas, was there any thought process of thinking like, okay, he got up, he had the will to get back up, and this kid obviously has heart. He's willing to
absolutely
keep going
through
this.
No quit in him. There's no quit in him. You know what I mean? He would have went out there and fought even if he was on one leg. Let me put it that way. He's a tough kid. He's got a lot of heart. But you know, from my experience in the sport as a trainer and then as an amateur boxer myself, when a guy gets caught with a shot like that, when you fall forward and go into that, you know, fetal position and you're unable to even take a little bit off the fall, the only reason he didn't fall flat is because he fell onto the referee's leg. Had the referee not been there, he would have fell flat on his face. And so when a fighter takes a shot like that, he's unconscious before he hits the canvas. And I knew that in my mind. No, he's unconscious because he didn't even remember the shot. All he remembered was getting to his feet. But I knew that already. I knew that from the punch. He never saw the punch. And so he was unconscious before he hit the canvas. So I know in my mind, okay, the kid's already got a concussion. He's already lost consciousness. Yeah, he behaves like a fighter. He manages to muster enough strength to get to his feet. But at the same time, live to fight another day. And you know, I'm never gonna put, you know, my pride in front of a fighter's well-being or safety. And you know, even though I know I caught some criticism because, you know, it's national television, it was a main event fight. You know, maybe I should have given him the minute in the corner to be worked on. But you know, at the end of the day, I know my fighter, and I worked with him long enough to know that he was seriously hurt. And no matter how much you wake him up or get the ice pack on him and get him back on his feet, I knew once he got touched again in the head, whether it was a jab or a right hand, he was going to crumble again. He was going to fall apart because he was still hurt. And so, you know, I looked at it as any trainer should. You know, it's our job to protect the fighter from himself, because most fighters are going to say, I'm okay, you know, let me go back out there, even though they're in the back of their mind, they're looking at you as their coach and their trainer to make the right choice.
And that's what I was going to say with the ref, going back with the ref. You know, obviously he was trying to see what is left and if he could turn the tables with a punch. But as a trainer, and most trainers, you know the capabilities and you know the stretch of what your fighter can do. And you did exactly what you have seen him do and perform in the ring. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host really quick, Gabriel, who's going to want to ask you some questions as well. Go ahead, brother.
Hey, Gabriel, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Thanks.
Nice, you know, nice work. I know you got overruled, and you know, it was a nice instinct. I thought you were right on the money, and I felt bad because, you know, we had talked, and you were like, this is my first time on TV, and, you know, my first big shot, and then it goes the way it goes. But I thought that you was a nice audition for your skills, and you know, it's just a good eye. You know, some guys just keep throwing a guy out there, and so what I'm thinking, what I want to know is just what's the aftermath of this? How did you guys handle the locker room? Are you guys moving forward together on second thought with the tape? Did it change?
I don't want to talk bad about, you know, anyone. And so I'll say this, that they still want me to be his trainer, to be on his team as his trainer. I just have some serious doubts about whether I can do that if the father's involved. And, you know, I don't want to say anything to knock him or anything like that, but, you know, we all make bad decisions and bad calls. And I've been completely honest with him that, you know, to me, if that were my son and I saw that he was hurt like that, that's not just a knockdown. He was unconscious before he hit that canvas. And, you know, If I had seen that and that was my son, I would have wanted the trainer to stop the fight. There was no way that I would send him back out there knowing that he was not in a position to properly defend himself. And, you know, to be honest with you, you know, the locker room wasn't a pretty scene when we went back there. And, you know, the only really good part is that the family as a whole was very supportive of me. Raymond was very supportive of what my decision was. As one of the commissioners, they actually came back and, you know, told me that I made the right decision. And, you know, they thought that the referee was going to stop the fight, too, because of the way, you know, he took the fall.
Right.
So a lot of people didn't, you know, what happened when he fell onto the referee's leg. I think some people didn't think that he was coming down or that he got hit as hard as he did. But I was sitting on the stool to the right and I saw exactly where his eyes were, and he never saw the punch. And when I saw his face, the way it snapped, I knew it. And the only reason, like I said, he didn't fall on his face was because the referee's leg was there, and he actually fell onto his leg before he fell face first onto the canvas. So
yeah, he was out. I mean, that was a home run punch, you know. It was.
You know what? It's
something classic.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, mm-hmm. It was the classic punch you didn't see, you know. But
right,
go on.
Exactly. And, well, you know what it is? When guys are fighting at that level, I mean, these guys were both undefeated. And like I said, going into the fight, you know, these guys they're moving up. They're already in the upper tier. They're not in the top tier. But when you're at that level, the littlest, the smallest mistake can cost you. And what it was he knew it was the end of the round, and he kind of flicked out a half jab. And Kareem, who was working, you know, you got to work the 3 minutes, Kareem saw that and capitalized on it with a punch that we knew was his best punch. And it was something we worked on in the gym constantly to defend against it. And no fault of Raymond's. I mean, he heard the 10-second hammer go. And, you know, I think he kind of walked in and was going to throw that jab right hand. And when Kareem slipped the jab, he followed Kareem's head as Kareem was leaning out to the left, and he never saw the right hand.
Let me ask you this. I mean, because you even said that in the locker room it was ugly, you know, and, you know, you don't want to say anything bad. And obviously we don't know his father personally. Anybody that was witnessing what happened on Friday Night Fights, we only know what we saw. We don't know him
right.
Personally
mm-hmm.
in a personal way. But has he copped up and humbled himself and now look back and say to you that, you know what, I was wrong?
I wish that I could tell you yes, that he did that. But, you know, the reports that I'm getting back to me is that it's just the opposite, you know, that, you know, he's looking at me as though I wasn't an experienced enough trainer. After we went through a complete training camp and everything else, now,
wow.
You know, I wasn't an experienced enough trainer to be out there with him, and, you know, just a lot of negative and nasty things. And I figured once.
How is that? How are you not an experienced trainer? I mean,
well,
you're not actually taking the punches.
Yeah,
well, now,
exactly.
Like, actually, that makes you an experienced trainer, because every time a fighter that hasn't lost loses, they always win a trainer. So, welcome to the brotherhood.
Oh, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, I figured once he cooled off and he really went back and watched the fight again, that, you know, he would change, you know, his tune with that. But just the opposite, not at all.
Teddy Atlas did you no favors, I thought, by saying, well, he's a young guy and they didn't let him recover. They didn't take care of him. And so it's kind of, maybe he could have. And I think maybe,
right.
I don't, the dad might be able to hang his hat on that. But I'm sorry, but that was the kind of fight that,
right.
If it was a more experienced, I don't even know about the ref's experience, but a different ref, a higher level ref, maybe would have saw that punch, saw it land, and went, yeah, that's it.
That's
you
it.
Know,
exactly.
You know, but,
exactly.
What knockdown, I understand, you have to give the fighter a shot, you know, a chance.
Right, exactly.
Two
mm-hmm.
knockdowns, and that second knockdown was nasty. You know, that was
yes.
a drop.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you just got to throw in the towel and realize, you know what, this is just not our day. You know,
right.
We, this guy's name, the hard hitter,
mm-hmm.
and we all knew that he was going to come in. What a screaming right
mm-hmm.
hit! And guess
exactly.
what?
Exactly.
Screamed. It screamed
yeah.
and echoed through that whole What was it? A casino you guys were at?
It was like where they do the hockey games there and the basketball games. It was kind of like like an arena. It was nice. It was a really nice venue there.
It echoed through that whole arena, and it echoed through everybody's TV and every living room. And I got to tell you, that when I seen that, and I saw you jump up there, and I saw you saying, because I was you know, yelling at T, I'm a, you know, Rick, stop this fight. You know, let this kid live another day. This
exactly.
is not a day. And I saw you doing that. I started applauding, and I know my neighbors think I'm crazy, dude, because I talk to them. I don't care, you know. They probably think I'm
you.
Now because my window's wide open. I'm doing a radio show, and they're like, who's this guy talking to? But it's sad here that his dad has not humbled up. And you know what? We don't talk about religion here, but hey, you know what? Manny Pacquiao, pray for that man, please. Pray for that man.
Very true. Very true. And, like, you know, I got a lot of people asking me. They say, well, you know, what if the situation, the roles were reversed and, you know, Kareem was your fighter and the same thing happened? And I told everybody, I said, you know something? That's a different situation. But at the same time, if a guy's hurt, a guy's hurt. I mean, I understand at 31 years old for Kareem, you know, there's that small window of opportunity. You know, he knows that this is it. You know, he's got to make that run. Do you make that call and say, give him a chance, give him that minute, and really only get 45 seconds in that corner, you know, to get him on the seat and get to work on him? And, you know, I had to say that, honestly, no, I would have stopped it in that case too, because, you know, to me at the end of the day, you know, they have a life outside of the ring. They have family, you have children, you have siblings, whatever. But at the end of the day, you have to be able to survive and live your life outside of the ring. And that's what I take that to the gym with me all the time. And I think about that because I've seen guys, you know, get seriously injured. Of course, we've seen guys lose their life in the ring. And so, you know, I take all that into consideration. And like I said, my pride will never come before any fighter's safety that I work with. And, you know, I don't care what the criticism is. You know, I'll always err on the side of caution before, you know, taking the other side and let someone get hurt just to make myself look good or make myself feel good in the long run.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you something. What's the rules about that? Where you were, at least, I know that they change, you know, in different commissions. But what is the rule? I mean, you're the head trainer. How did you get overruled in that corner? Was it just kind of got bullied, it's your call, right?
Yeah, it should have been my call. But you know, I found out after the fight that I don't know what happened, but I wasn't actually listed as the trainer. Felix Pintor listed as the head trainer and me as an assistant trainer. I don't know how that happened because, again, I was hired as his head trainer. But that's what it was listed as. I was listed as
It sounds like
assistant.
They didn't have any confidence in you in the beginning. I mean, if that's the way he looked at it, and he, by him even saying, you know, he's an inexperienced guy, I don't know. It just
I don't
really
know if
weird.
It's about confidence. It's like when I talk the father's son, sometimes it works. You know, Felix Trinidad and his father did really well together. You know, Shane Mosley and his dad did very well together at this point. But then there's those other cases, and you know, there's been from that father's son, the son died, Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
I think sometimes, I don't know if the dad's living vicariously, but the dad sometimes holds on to that win, like, way too long. Even, like, Trinidad Pockets, like, dad's telling him, you know, you're doing okay. Like, no, he's getting killed in there, you know?
Exactly.
So I think it's that there's a little, I know you, the trainers, absolutely care about the fighters, but there's a professional attachment that you guys have that the dads don't have that's absolutely necessary. Would you agree?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, like you're saying that, the father-son relationship is, you know, they're sometimes they are living vicariously through their child, and they want them to be successful and succeed in the ring. And sometimes it blinds them to what's actually going on out there. And for me, you know, I just make it a point, whether, you know, we're in training and sparring or whether it's a fight, I'm watching everything that's going on, you know. And to be honest with you, there were some points in the fight early where I just didn't like the way that Raymond was taking some of the shots. I just didn't like the way he was reacting to it. But as long I felt as though if he can box Kareem and keep him on the outside and take him in deep water, we would definitely have a better chance. But, you know, it didn't get to that point. And, you know, my hat's off to Kareem and to Virgil Hunter, you know, excellent trainer, class guy. You know, I had a chance to talk with him even before the fight and at the weigh-in. And I have, you know, nothing but kudos for him. And, you know, I was surprised that he even knew who I was, you know. And so that made me feel good. I was humbled by that.
Yeah, really good guy. He's a really good guy.
Yes, yes, you know? Definitely.
Hey, before we let you go, I got two more questions, and they're not from myself or from Gabriel. This is, you know, we have a lot of followers on Leaving the Ring on the Twitter and Facebook. One of them comes from S. Busy. He says, question for Coach Rick, should Serrano's father be banned for being in his corner for future fights? What are your thoughts?
Let me tell you, on a personal opinion, absolutely. I would say absolutely. On the professional side, you know, I don't know. I think that, you know, there should be some limitations as to what his involvement is when it comes to the fight. Like, I don't agree with him because of what happened. I don't agree with him being in the corner during a fight. You know, he can be there, watch your son's work. You know, if you feel as though throughout the training camp that the trainer's doing a good job and you like what you see, and then all of a sudden fight night, because it doesn't go your way, now the trainer's not a good trainer, then there's something wrong with the father. Because, you know, at the end of the day, the trainer's working with your son all this time, and you get to know exactly how this, you know, young man reacts to, you know, pressure, to getting caught with a good shot, all those things. And so the father really is not – there's a disconnect there when it comes to the training. And then all of a sudden you want to jump in the front seat, and you really don't know how your son's reacting to what's going on in the ring.
Right.
So, you know, on a personal level, I'd say absolutely not. He shouldn't be allowed to be there. And, again, but on a professional side, you know, I think there should be some rules in place, you know, for fathers that have shown in the past or shown a history – of not being able to control themselves or not being able to make a rational decision, right, in the corner. Absolutely.
Now, another one really quick from Matt Jimenez, who's part of the Danny Garcia, and he just put it up on Twitter, and this is actually, I think, a lot of fight fans who I've spoken to. This is one of the criticism of that night. Now, granted that this was emotional, this was a whirlwind, this is like one of those situations, well, you don't know until you're in that position. But at the end of the day, this is him tweeting, at the end of the day, he should have at least let Raymond sit down regardless of if it was over or not. What are your thoughts?
I absolutely agree with him. And you know what? If he goes back and watches the tape like I did, you know, you'll see that I had the stool was up there after about 7 seconds of him being in the corner. And I went back and I watched it. I counted 7 seconds. And again, like I told you in the beginning, that wasn't even my job to bring the stool up there. I went up there because I was stopping the fight, thinking that, you know, the father had the stool in the ring. When I found out that he hadn't brought it up, I turned right around and grabbed it and put it into the ring. So the stool was there. But what happened, the argument of all of a sudden I went from being in charge to now the cut man and the father are blocking me out because they don't want me talking to the commissioner and stopping the fight. They're more concerned about that than sitting Tito down on the stool. And that's where the disconnect was with that. But the stool was there. I wanted to sit him down. If you watch it again, you'll hear me telling, I'm saying to Tito, turn around and look at me. And I said it again, the fight's over. And the commissioner heard me say it. And the father starts cursing and yelling that the fight's not over. There's no way, send them out there, you know. And so that's where, you know, the chaos was there and finally got them to sit down. But, you know, I wanted them to sit, but there was just, I was on the outside of the ropes. There was no way I could get in there and actually sit him down on the stool.
If you could do it all over again, what could you have done different? I mean, I've seen some coaches, you know, just bully their way into the ring to see the insurance of their fighter. I've seen some coaches tell, and amateurs, I've been in that situation where I've told the father just to shut up and go sit down, and I've seen other coaches just get in their faces and basically just take control. Do you think you lost control, man? I mean, some fight fans really feel some, you know, I think a lot of fans or sympathetic to what has happened with you in that fight.
Right, right.
But same thing, same time, they're criticizing. They're saying that you lost control. Why did you lose control? And do you think that yourself, do you think that you dropped the ball just a bit?
Well, you know what? I believe me, I beat myself up about this, you know, from the night it happened on. And, you know, look, in hindsight, it's always 20/20. I'm always critical of what I could have done better. You know, I just feel like I was never really given the in-charge spot. And then when I found out, like I said, after the fact that I wasn't even listed as the head trainer, then I realized why the commission didn't listen to me when I said the fight was over three or four times.
Right.
They were listening to the father, you know, because I was standing my ground saying that the fight's done. It's over. You hear me yelling it, that it's over. And the commission next to me is saying he's agreeing with me. But then the head commissioner that came up, because the dad insisted that it wasn't over, they allowed the fight to go on. So, you know, I mean, like I said, I beat myself up. I look back and I'm like, what could I have done different? You know, maybe just pick up where everybody else left off. Maybe just grab the stool on my way up because nobody else grabbed it. Maybe pull myself into the ring and push the cut man out of the way. And just cover the fighter up and just shield him and just say the fight's over. You know, I went through all that, and maybe next time that's something that I would do. But I got to tell you, I don't believe that this was a very unique camp that I was in, and I'm just going to say unique because I've never worked with anyone or any other fighter where, you know, I'm hired as a trainer, and, you know, during the camp and then up until the fight, it's wishy-washy as to whether or not I'm actually in charge, you know, and that's what happened there. It was never, you know, and this went on all the way up till the fight. So I was never solidified in my position. It was wishy-washy from the start. And, you know, my thing was I stuck with Raymond because I gave him my word that I would stick with him and through the camp. And that's the only reason, believe me, midway through, I was ready to hang up the gloves and walk away from it, and I told him that. But, you know, I gave him my word. I'm a man of my word, and, you know, I told him I would stay with him through the fight. And, again, of course, you know, I was hoping that it would be a different
right.
outcome.
Right.
You know, but
I think everybody was hoping. You know what I mean? I mean, I've said before, you know, Cream Mayfield, love the guy. You know, but, like, you know, like I tell – like my grandfather used to tell me all the time, there's two sides to a coin. We don't know the thought process of them. We don't, you know, could have been, there could be a million assumptions of why
right.
you were pulled into the camp. And then later on, the change of mind, the change of confidence of having you as the head trainer. But Rick, hey, brother, it was a pleasure having you on. I'm glad that we got your part of the story. I'm glad that we got to hear your take and your thought. And again, I say, I applaud you. I thought that you did the right thing. My co-host agrees with me on that subject there, and I
Thank
think a lot
guys.
Of fight fans agree
yeah.
that you did the right thing. And just keep doing what you're doing, brother. Keep doing what
Thank
you're doing.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And Gabriel, thank you, too. I really appreciate you guys having me on the show. And just a quick note, like I've gotten a ton of – I can't even tell you how many calls, emails, and texts I've gotten with support from people around the country and around the world. I'm really – just, you know, letting me know that they saw where I was coming from and, you know, they felt as though I made the right decision. So, you know, like I said, I beat myself up about it, but at the end of the day, I'll always err on the side of caution for, you know, any fighter that I work with.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you again, man, for coming on, leaving the ring.
You got it. My pleasure, guys. Take care.
You have a good night.
You too, man.
You too. Bye-bye. Yep.
Well, there you go. Rick James Coward, coach, and made the right decision. Tough decision. You know, like I said, we can't assume or we're not in the minds of Raymond Serrano's father. Obviously, he probably had his reason of changing, you know, or having this belief that just not the confidence there of making Coach Coward as the head trainer. But I'm really glad that we had him on. I thought that this is something a lot of folks did want to hear about and have some clarity too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation that needed to be looked at because, I mean, you know, Teddy Atlas kind of editorialized it. We watched it on TV, but nobody really quite got it.
So it was kind of nice to just hear him break it down. I need to call in our next guest, so I'll be right back.
There you go. Fight fans, if you want to call in, you certainly can. I try to tweet back everybody that hits us up. I can't do like three things at once. So if you see me like pause or lose my train of thought, it's because I'm trying to hit back somebody that's asking me a question or asking if they about talking about a particular fight. So excuse me. And fight fans that are on hold right now wanting to talk here on Leaving Ring, 3 hours of boxing talk. Stay on the line. Don't hang up. We're going to patch you in, and we're going to continue talking some boxing here. But if you want to call in, 347-215-7598, you're listening to Leaving the Ring with your host, Dave Duenas, and Gabriel Montoya. And I believe my co-host is back.
I am back. I'm here with the advisor or manager to Ricky Wright, as well as Josie Alusigan, Mr. Damian Ramirez. Welcome to the show, sir.
How are you doing, guys?
Doing good.
Let's cut right to it. They're talking, you guys have been the mandatory for the WBC for, I believe, 2 years now. And no one will fight you guys. You're a dangerous matchup. They keep claiming, you guys aren't a big draw or this and that, although, Danny Garcia is not a big draw. But here he is scheduled to fight Amir Khan, July 14th. He's got your belt. Talk to us about what you guys are doing to rectify the situation.
Well, he is fighting Amir Khan, but it's not for the WBC belt. We have already been notified by the WBC that it's not for the title, and he either has to face us or he has to vacate. He has to face it. He has to vacate or be stripped. Facing us, evidently, that's not something they want. They want to do right now. So, according to the WBC, they've been standing by Josie on this one 100%. And also, just to clarify stuff, I've only been with him just recently. He's been with him for the last year and a half. So, it's just a matter of waiting to see what happens now. They want us to work something out with us where Josie is a co-feature and then comes back and fights, the winner. But, right now we just, Josie's goal right now is just to fight for the title.
I mean, is this going to be just straight up, at this point you guys go litigation? I mean, how do you sue an organization like the WBC? I mean, they just seem to change their rules every time it suits them.
Yeah, well, the bylaws I've been checking have been changed way before this, recently before this happened. I believe at the convention in Las Vegas, their bylaws had changed regarding unification taking precedent over mandatory. Also, they promised us they would not sanction Lucas Matisse and Humberto Soto for an interim title because they don't do that either. And besides, Josie's number one, so it wouldn't be fair to him. Now, at the end of the day, it is what it is with the organization. A lot of times there are no politics involved as far as the fight and who it is. We got to go back. Danny Garcia was never supposed to fight for the title. Eric Morales wasn't supposed to fight for the title either.
Right.
But nevertheless, they let Eric Morales fight for the title. And I just think, these fighters today, they following whatever the promoter tells them they should do in their best interest. And as mad as I, as angry as we are, I would have to say that, Golden Boy is doing the job that they're supposed to do for their fighter. You know what I mean? So, as far as, our promoters, I really can't say what's going on because at the end of the day, there's a lot of difficulty for them securing a Josie spot to fight for the title. And so, Eric Morales, what actually pisses me off is these fighters on today are not like the fighters back in the day with the Hagler's, the Hunters, the Camacho Juniors, and these guys that they say, well, you're the best, I'm going to fight you, you're the best. And let's go back to the recent fighters. You got Roy Jones Jr., who's always faced all his mandatories. You got Winky Wright, has faced all his number one mandatories. You have Bernard Hopkins, for how many years, has faced all his mandatories. You got Tito Trinidad, faced all his mandatories. Even Floyd Mayweather, to a certain point, has faced all his mandatories. So, I mean, you got these young kids coming up, and, you know, unfortunately, there's one man controlling this game, this fight game right now, and he has a stronghold on it, and his motto is to get his fighters paid, which makes sense, but your fighters are going to be paid. But what happens, in, you know, historically, they don't go down in the Hall of Fame like the current fight, like the old fighters that fought the best to be the best.
Yeah.
It's
frustrating, man, watching these guys, and you know, everybody wants to, it's that classic, you know, you can't get up the ladder unless you fight somebody that's higher up on the ladder. But the guys higher up on the ladder don't want anybody else to come up there with them. They want the easy guys. They want the paydays. I mean, as good a fight as Cotto Mayweather was, you know, Floyd didn't expect that out of Cotto. You know, they picked him because they thought he was shot. And he had a little bit more in the tank. I mean, that was just the bottom line.
Of course. Same reason Pavlik picked Bernard Hopkins. Same reason Jean Pascal picked Bernard Hopkins. That was the same reason. I mean, look, at the end of the day, a lot of these fighters need to stand up and be real men and say, look, I want to fight and this one want to fight. But if you listen to these guys, like, look, I've always respected Danny Garcia, you know, and for him to say on the podium when the Josie approached him, very politely and respectfully at that, he approached him, you know, he said, I gave you your 5 minutes of fame. Listen here, excuse my French, but who the fuck are you? Who are you? If I take him down 34th Street on 80-degree weather in a summer day and walk through 34th Street at lunch hour, I guarantee you, you won't have five people stop you for an autograph.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, he's kind of a young kid that nobody knows who he is. And for him to be dictating and saying, who the hell is this guy? I mean, who are you? You know,
exactly.
I know you just got this belt, but who are you?
Exactly. And then who are you going to blame? Your manager? Come on. Your manager, what they're doing is they're trying to get you money. That's more money for them. They're putting you in position. But you as a man, you should respect another fighter, because think about it. You only got the opportunity because you're under the same promotional banner as the person that held the title. Other than that, how did you deserve to be number one when you wasn't even ranked in the WBC? That's my frustration comes in with the WBC at that time is he fought Kendall Holt for the IBF title.
Right.
The IBF mandatory number one spot. But Josie was already a number one. So how the hell do you put him to say, well, he fought for the number one spot. The fight with Kendall Holt was both for the number mandatory for the BC and the IBF when you already have a mandatory there. So how can he become the mandatory? Nevertheless, you know, it happened. It is what it is. They're doing everything they can to keep him away from a Josie because for nothing. Because now they put him in with somebody else that's going to destroy him just as bad. And I'm just, you know, just being honest, skill-wise and everything, Danny Garcia, he's a tough kid, yeah. But really, skill-wise, what skill he has is except for the fact that he just comes straight forward and fights. He's durable. He's a typical Philly fighter. That's what he is, a typical Philly fighter. He comes straight forward and fights. And so what you're going to do when you fight a person that moves and a tactician like Amir Khan?
Yeah, I don't – well, I mean, this is – I'm not even sure if he's with – Golden Boy, he's with Al Haymon, you know, and I guess that's kind of the same thing these days. It kind of seems that way, that there's a nice little partnership going on there. You know, but hey, do what you got to do. But it's just not right, you know, what they're doing.
Gavin,
they're just absolutely bypassing, you know.
Gavin, not to interrupt you. Look at all Al Haymon fighters.
They're all placed with Golden Boy.
Let me give you an example of all Al Haymon's fighters, okay? He might be on the business end of it. He did the smart thing. He went out there, and I'm nothing against him because at the end of the day, there was a lot of other people that could have did it. But he came and put his money where his mouth is, and he signed every fighter that had two legs. You understand?
Yeah.
And he was able to get the deals he wanted because he controlled. If I went to the NBA, remember David Falk, the big agent of the NBA? He ran the NBA, so all the top young kids that came out the league, you know, since he had Michael Jordan, he was able to get Michael Jordan any other player because the league would give him whatever he wants because he had the great Michael Jordan. And the same thing with Scott Boras. You know,
right.
Scott Boras has every baseball player. So, of course, Scott Boras can get whatever he wants. So that's what Al Haymon came and did, what everybody else was scared to do. He came in, he got him. But or, you know, at the end of the day, all his fighters wind up losing. You look at Andre Berto. When they put him in there with somebody tough, and he's a good friend of mine, and no disrespect, he lost. When they put Jermaine Taylor in there with somebody tough, he's the way he's at. Look where Jermaine Taylor's at. I mean, you look at all the fighters, Chris Areola. They finally put him in with real fights, and they can't perform. They can't perform because why? He's been giving them easy fights, easy fights, easy fights.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the only one in his stable that has fought tough fighters is Floyd.
Paul Williams. I'll give Paul Williams that. He's always to get tough matchups.
Yeah. No, okay, but look where Paul Williams is at. I'm going to give you that. Paul Williams, I'm going to just give you an example of Paul Williams. And me as manager, Paul Williams has lost all his fights to Southpaw. After he lost his first fight to the first Southpaw, there was no reason to put him in. I mean, the only reason that he beat Winky because Winky was out for 2 years, 2.5
yeah.
years. His timing was off. So what happened was he came and fought Martinez, lost. He fought Quintana, lost. He fought Lara, lost. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day,
yeah.
you know, you gotta look at it and look at.
He's never been on a pay-per-view show. He's never been taken to that next level. I actually predicted that he would never be on that pay-per-view level. So it is interesting. You know, let me ask you something too. We're talking about Winky, and before I forget this, I think we have another guest at like 7, but we got 15 minutes. Okay, on the Boxing Lab, it was Tuesday night, radio show, Peter Quillen was on, and he said that they were doing VADA testing. Now, I kind of covered the PED thing, so I knew that wasn't true, that they were in fact actually using USADA testing. But I'd also, you know, I talked to you guys, and you know, you talked to me about it a little bit. I heard something from somebody else, and then I talked to Richard Schaefer the next day, and he said that that's just not true, that they're not doing that, and it didn't make any sense to him why you guys would do drug testing 2 weeks out from the fight, and it seemed kind of preposterous would be his stance. You know, he seemed kind of incredulous that this was even happening. Can you elaborate on the situation?
Thank you. All right, well, let me ask you a question. With Peterson and Khan, how far out was it before they found out that he got – that he was negative.
That he was what?
How far out in between the fight, by fight time, did they find out he was negative?
Oh, that he tested positive?
Yeah. I'm sorry, that he tested positive. Correct, yeah.
It was a few weeks out from the fight. I have to look at my notes. They didn't tell them until the 11th hour. I mean, they waited 3 weeks to tell him about the B sample and all that.
Here's the thing. Since Peter Quillen already went and told everybody, and you know, since it was Peter Quillen, and just on the record, before I get to that stuff, but
mm-hmm.
since it was Peter Quillen that told everybody, and told the press that it was his press release, and since it was Peter Quillen that also ruined him and Winky fighting on May 5th because he went out there and told everybody the fight was taking place, you know, and of course Winky gets the blame for everything. But we were the ones that requested the testing, and only after Peterson came out tested positive. You know, we sat down, and Winky just felt that, you know, it was better to be to make sure that, you know, that everything was on the up and up. He wasn't accusing Peter Quillen of anything. He's not saying that Peter Quillen is being dirty or nothing. He just felt like, you know, the stance that Floyd Mayweather's taking and cleaning up the sport, and he felt like that, you know, he just wanted to go along with it.
Sure.
At the time, Winky's a veteran. Winky's is a throwback fighter, just like Bernard is. And the problem with Winky is he said, I'll fight somebody who doesn't make a difference. You know, I had to convince him that it was best. Well, not convince him. I had to, you know, have a discussion with him that it was best for him to just to have it. It can't hurt us. Unfortunately, we notified Golden Boy 2 weeks ago. Just recently we got our papers and stuff like that. So we notified them 2 weeks ago. So I would say it's about a month out. And even if it is 2 weeks to the fight, whether the results come in, with today's technology, the results come back right away. It's not like
right.
From my understanding, it's not a you know, blood test you get back from a lab 2 to 3 days. You know, I've never heard a blood lab take more than 2 weeks to come back.
No, it would have been. Especially because you mentioned that to me, that as soon as the Peterson thing broke, you guys didn't even wait for the Berto thing to break. As soon as I broke the Peterson thing, you guys were like, yeah, let's do this. You know, we need
exactly.
And I agree with that. You know, now let me ask you this: which company did you ask for? Peterson's company, or the company that was offered, or that you guys were going to go with? I mean.
Well, originally we asked for, I believe it was WADA. We, you know, we asked for to do the same testing that was done for Peterson Khan.
But instead, you guys started to go with USADA.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, we didn't know who was who. I mean,
sure,
at the end of the day, it was more or less we just wanted the testing done, the random drug testing done.
I mean, everybody's kind of learning right now, so I'm not trying to, you know, put you in the middle of a brand war. I was just curious, you know. Now, so you guys are not going to do the testing at this point?
Say that again?
You guys are not going to do the testing at this point?
No, we actually did already. Papers were signed, and we sent it out already.
Oh, is that right? The papers are signed.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, no, papers were signed, and it was sent out already. So, I mean, it's just a matter of right now. I mean, I was told this before by another reporter that said it's mute. It makes no sense to do the drug testing now. And that's not true, because my whole thing is, even if Winky wins, even when Winky, let me clarify, even when Winky wins, and the results have to come out. So even if it comes out a week after the fight that Quillen's results came back positive, you know what I mean? It's more or less for the sport. It's not about accusing Quillen of doing anything or saying that Peter's taking this and Peter's taking that. We're not saying that at all. And in fact, I hope he's not. And I'm not going to go and accuse him, because as far as I've known, he's not. You know, I can't really say he's done it. And I'm not going to say he's done it. But more or less, we never know. This sport has become, boxing has become more of a reality TV series than it has a competitive sport. I mean, from one day to the next, between these organizations making up the rules day by day, you know, to supposedly these pills that are contaminating the fighters, you know what I mean, to the fighters, you know, standing on there and claiming to be the best, but they go fight, you know, bum fights. And I grant you, nobody knows who a Josie is, but at the end of the day, nobody knew who Danny Garcia was. Nobody knew who... Nobody was until you win a world title, unless you're Oscar De La Hoya, where you're coming out the Olympics already in the amateur. They made a big name for you.
It's pretty damn rare. I mean, look at even Sergio Martinez. I mean, not a lot of people know who he is.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
He's the best middleweight in the world. You know,
people knew who Pernell Whitaker was, because Pernell Whitaker and Evander Holyfield, it was so talked about highly in the amateur days. They were promoted, right?
I don't knock people's hustle, but there's a guy on Twitter right now trying to argue with me and saying, it's not Danny Garcia's fault, and Al Haymon fighters don't get a fair shake. But I'm sorry, if you're going to wear the belt, there are rules that go with that belt. And you can't just always hide behind, hey, I got a manager and my promoter.
Exactly.
Be a champion. That's what a champion does. He's a cut above.
Exactly. For that person that said that to you, tell him to look at boxing back in the day. This guy must be 16 years old. Because tell them to look at the fighters back in the days. They didn't hide behind their managers and promoters. They said Bramble, Livingston Bramble, Edwin and Chapo Rosario, Jose Luis Ramirez.
Sugar Ray Robinson.
You look at Mike Tyson, the baddest man on the planet, who could have picked any opponent he wanted to. Who's my mandatory? He defended all three titles. Look at Bernard Hopkins. He defended all his titles against the man. Nobody knew who Allen was, that guy he fought, Allen. Nobody knew who Murky Sosa was when Roy Jones Jr. defended against Murky Sosa at Madison Square Garden. At the end of the day, it's not about who people know. That's not what boxing is about. You go to MMA, and with MMA, when you got Brock Lesnar defends against the heavyweight guy, the Mexican guy that beat him and took the title, nobody knew who that man was. But now people know who he was, because he was given the opportunity to be the named person, to beat that person who supposedly was that man. And it's the same thing in boxing. You know, Ray Leonard got his opportunity with Marvin Hagler. I mean, everybody fought the best. Today, when a fighter says, oh, it's not me, it's, you know, I do what my promoter says. No, it's not your promoter. Your promoter is not the fucking boss. Excuse my friends, guys. I don't mean to curse, but...
Oh, it's in the internet. It's okay.
Oh, you know, your promoter is not the boss. You the boss. Let me give you a perfect example. Amir Khan says he wants Floyd Mayweather. If Canelo Alvarez says I want this person, that's who they're going to give him, because that's his boss. If you understand what I'm saying, if a fighter says this is who I want to fight, that's who they're going to fight. When Felix Trinidad told Don King, I want this person, what, you know, you got to give Don King his props. They could say what they want to say about Don King.
Right.
But at the end of the day, Don King put the best to fight the best. He put his champions, Julio Cesar Chavez, guys. How many times has he made his mandatory? Hundreds and hundreds. How many times has he made his mandatory?
One of my favorite mandatories is, and people always kind of forget about this fight, but, you know, Felix Trinidad moved up to 154, beat the hell out of David Reed. He had a mandatory to keep that belt so that he could fight Fernando Vargas into a unification. So he took on this giant guy named Mamadou Thiam, who's this, like, ripped, you know, scary French guy, black guy. And he took him out in, like, four rounds. But I always looked at that and said, you know, you wouldn't see a lot of big-name guys on a mandatory that looked like that guy. And the fight
Look, nobody wants.
They damn sure wouldn't do that.
They climb at me, oh, I do what my boss tells, I do what my manager. I'm going to give you an example, like Garcia, when he said, oh, Garcia goes, oh, I don't know, I got to wait to see what my manager, Al Heyman, schedules clears first, and Golden Boy's and my promoter schedule clears, and let me know when I'm next, when my turn comes. I'm like, what? Does he even listen to himself speaking?
No, probably not. How do you wait for your manager?
That's like I tell a Josie, oh, Josie, you're not gonna fight for the title yet. You gotta wait for my schedule to clear so I can tell you when you can fight. Come on, I mean, it's just
foolish. But listen, at the end of the day, it's their way of not being a man and saying, let me face my mandatory. That's it.
Right.
If you think you could have been Josie, so but look at Eric Morales. He had the title, didn't want to fight a Josie, wound up vacating anyway, vacating. Now, look what happens now. Danny Garcia says, nah, I'm not losing my title. I don't want to give up my title. But now he winds up getting stripped anyway. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if you're going to lose as a champion. There's nothing wrong with taking a loss as a champion. At least you stepped up. That's why Shane Mosley gets a lot of respect. Because
yeah, champion, like, believe that you might actually win. You know, don't
right.
look at everybody and go, oh, it's a tough matchup. I don't really want that. I mean, what do people really want to be? I understand it's a business. You got a small window. You're a fighter and all that. But, you know, I mean, come on now. But let me ask you this. We've got to wrap up. We've got another guest coming in about 5 minutes. What's the next step?
Well, right now, like I said, our focus is still fighting for the title, and that's what we're going to do. So, according to the WBC, they're going to strip Danny Garcia.
Cool. Well, then they should. If he avoids his mandatory, sorry, I mean, the buck kind of got passed to him. He got the belt. You got to have responsibilities. The president doesn't take over some duties of the presidency. He takes all of them. And when you put on that belt, you've got rules, and you've got regulations, and you've got mandatories, and you've got obligations. And,
I mean, unless Danny Garcia decides to vacate and says tomorrow I'm giving up the belt, you know what
yeah.
I mean? But I'm sure he's not going to do that because he's probably listening to his inner circle that's probably telling him, don't worry, we got this under control. You're going to fight for the BC title. Don't worry about those people. They're nobody.
I was told by Schaefer yesterday that they were looking at a triple unification. They fully expect the IBF and the WBA to strip Lamont and give those belts to Khan. I don't know if that's all going to happen. I mean, I think everybody, they're more confident about that fight than Danny Garcia seems to be about fighting a loose again. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we'll, you know, keep me apprised, and I'll keep in touch with you, and we'll just keep watching the story as it goes. We got a long time to go until July 14th. So.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Damon. Really appreciate it, man. A lot of information.
No problem. I appreciate it. You guys have me on.
Hey, our pleasure. Anytime, man. You have a good night.
All right. Take it easy.
And just a quick note and correction, Damian Fernandez, and not Ramirez, is Damian Fernandez, and he's the manager of a Josie and Winky Wright, you know, because there was some confusion in the beginning, Gabe, because a few people heard and I heard that you had mentioned it was Danny Garcia's manager, so that kind of.
Well, did I say that?
Oh,
no, I meant Josie lose again. My bad.
No problem.
You know,
no problem. But we have our
I'm
next.
Getting old.
I know. We're both getting old. We're both getting up there and stuff. And, you know, we get so much stuff.
It is Ramirez, though. I don't know where the people are getting Fernandez from. But, no, it is. I mean, I'm looking at Google. And I'm looking at my phone. It's got his name in it. It's Damian Ramirez.
Okay,
but,
I'm just putting off because you tweeted it was Fernandez. You put it on your Twitter.
Oh, well. Dave, I'm getting old and I'm getting crazy.
You know what it is? all the work right now, man. You've been a workaholic, and I think your mind is not there. You know, and I didn't even interrupt this interview because you guys were gelling so well. And at the same time, I wanted to hear a lot of the stuff that he was, you know, breaking down and, you know, some good stuff, you know. And love to get Danny Garcia on. Love to get him on, man, if we can get him on, you know. And haven't been had the chance to get him on the radio show to ask him some of these questions that Josie's manager was saying and his thoughts about how he should defend his title at the WBC. You know, Fight Fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. We're going to be waiting for our next guest, which is going to be Henry Ramirez, the head trainer of Chris Nymer Oriella, and Josecito Lopez, who's got a fight coming at the Staples against Victor Ortiz. So while we're waiting for him to call in and talk to us here on Leaving the Ring, let's pass in some Fight Fans really quick that have been patiently waiting to speak to us here on the radio show. Also, too, really, really quick, man, I did promise the publicist for Antonio DeMarco that I was going to mention this. Antonio DeMarco, lightweight champion, is going to be in attendance at the 99th annual Fontana Days Festival on Saturday, June 2nd. Go out there. He's going to be taking some pictures and signing some autographs with his fans. It's part of the Casa Hispania booth at the parade held in Fontana, California. The booth will be located at the Veterans Park, 17255 Morrell Avenue, Fontana, California, 92335. So go out there and support the champion, DeMarco, who's going to be getting back into the ring. I believe it's going to be in Tijuana and... It's either going to be in Mexicali or Tijuana on August 20th. So keep a lookout for his next fight. And if you want to have a chance to go take some pictures, get a glove signed, you certainly can with Antonio DeMarco. So we're waiting for Henry Ramirez to call in. Fight Fans, let's patch in one right now. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving Ring. Let's go with CT, who wants to talk. Josecito Lopez and Victor Ortiz. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just want to say to Gabe, I remember that Mama 2 TM fight versus Trinidad. I remember it was in Miami, Florida, and the guy's eyes swelled up within, like, I don't know, a minute into the fight, I think it was.
It was that uppercut, left hook, uppercut, right. A combination of Tito, and boom, his eye just blew up. Can you tell him a Tito fan? Oh, dude, yeah, he didn't want to go away. He didn't want to go away at all,
But, yeah, I think on this fight between Ortiz and Lopez, I think mentally it's better for Lopez coming into this fight. I think, you know, Ortiz is coming off of a disappointment, you know, hearing that Berto can't fight him again. And I think it favors Lopez a little bit. You know, mentally he's going to get to Ortiz, and this is a little bit different style than he's been preparing for. But I think it's going to be a brawl. I think these two style matchup, it can go either way. I don't think it's going to go the distance, though. Either Ortiz catches him with a hard shot, or Lopez just wears Ortiz down. I mean, it could happen either way. I mean, work rate, you know, we've seen how Ortiz mentally sometimes he breaks down and fights. You know what I mean? He goes out very aggressive, like you guys say. I actually see it in fights too. And as soon as you can see it, he can't put the guy away. He kind of backs off, you know. He skips around the ring a little bit, moves to the side. He's not as aggressive. So I'm interested to see what happens in this fight.
It's a trip. They're a trip, you know. Josecito seems so, like, energized, like, ready for it. And I wonder, I mean, Victor is so hard to read. He's really growing on me the more I interact with him. He's just so, I'm like, dude, you're not from Kansas. You're definitely from SoCal. He's just so laid back, you know. But he handled it well, like, when it all went down, he just went to the gym and just said, you know, I'm going to keep fighting because I know they're going to fix this. I know I'm going to have a fight of some kind. And let me stay sharp. And he just basically, you know, he just kind of kept that fighter mindset. He didn't know who it was going to be, but he knew somebody was going to be there. And I like that. You know, I just Victor's attitude is interesting. I mean, like I said, I can't read him, but he just wants to get down. And he really wants to entertain the fans and Josecito seems to be right on that track, too. And I think it's going to be – he kind of learned from that Jesse Vargas fight a little bit. We'll talk to him here in a few minutes. But I think he really wants to push it and really make a statement here. So it's – either that's a bad decision.
I think so, yeah.
Or mm-hmm. – yeah. I think so, too. Like, what he said, like, we have the same power. I was like, I would say I hit a little bit lighter and I should box him a little bit more, but we'll see.
I actually thought that Lopez beat Vargas that night.
I did too. You know what was really weird about that?
I talked about that. But, you know, CT, I got to put you on hold. I got to put you on hold, brother, because we do have our next guest with us here on Leaving the Ring. Just stay on hold, brother. We'll get you back in and stuff. And really quick, because I'm having DeMarco's manager yell at me because he says that that's not the date that the PR screwed up. It's August 4th that he's going to be back. I mean, we're slipping up a lot over here on Leaving the Room today.
Hey, you'll get my coffee.
Pass over my cigar. But let's put in two gentlemen that have been on Leaving the Ring numerous times. Henry is a good friend of the show, and he's got a very excellent fighter, a guy that I love to watch, and I've seen it in the gym. Josecito Lopez and Henry Trainer, head coach Henry Ramirez. What's up, brothers? How you guys doing?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing good.
What's up, man? Glad to be back.
So, hey, congratulations first off with this big fight with Victor Ortiz. I'm really pumped up. I see a lot of fans as well are pumped up about this fight. You know, there was a few fans that I had conversations with that they were like, you know, Josecito Lopez, you know, got a lot of power. He's going to get knocked out early, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I was just like, what? Like, am I not seeing the same things here? I like this fight. I like the whole everything about it. I like the story behind this fight. I like the scenarios that we can come up with. This is a fun fight, man. I applaud you guys taking this fight and skipping the Kendall Holt and moving up to Victor Ortiz, which is it's a big step, and it's a new weight division for you, Lopez, to do. And how do you feel about that? First off, man, moving up in weight.
Well, I'm excited about it. You know what? I'm a taller 140 pounder, and I can hold the weight well. I don't think it will be too much of an issue weight wise. I mean, I know he's a little bit bigger up top, but I mean, if anybody knows boxing, it doesn't matter how big you are or how small you are. You can punch, and I'm one of those fighters that can punch.
Henry, you want to weigh on this, brother?
Well, I think Jose hit it on the head. Jose's a bigger 140. And, you know, Victor has campaigned most of his career at 140 also. So it's not like we're fighting a guy who's been there for years and years. If I'm not mistaken, I believe Berto was his first fight at 147, you know?
Yes.
And alluding to what Jose said, you know, yeah, Victor's bigger on top, but I think Jose's going to prove on June 23rd he's bigger where it counts in the balls.
Now, does this kind of change up for both of you guys in training camp of how you guys were doing things at 140? Now being at 147, does this now kind of consist in a different type of eating habit, weightlifting, conditioning, or are you guys pulling in somebody that can help you gain the pounds properly so that you're effective on against a Victor Ortiz?
Yeah, well, I'm working with a personal trainer, with a strength and conditioning coach. Herb Larkins, he's helping me. He's actually told me I'm going to gain 2 pounds of speed, 2 pounds of energy, and 3 pounds of power. So I'm going to hold the weight well.
You know, Henry, it's Gabe Montoya, and Josecito, welcome to the show, man. Really excited you guys are here. We talked yesterday, but Henry wasn't there. And I'm really curious, Henry, have you been working on putting the stool into the corner?
It was funny today because Chris goes, man, I was messing with Gabe and I think they were looking for some kind of storyline. The storyline was I was at my daughter's middle school graduation, guys, and to be honest, I just wasn't going to miss that for a press conference where I could tell you without even being there what Jose and Hope Chris would say. I've been to so many of them.
Right.
I wasn't biting. At first, Chris was like, yeah, some things have happened, and we had to bring Danny in. I mean, we kind of keep Henry around. And I'm sitting there kind of going, I talked to Henry the other day. He would have told me if this was true. It's pretty funny. But for people listening, you guys have brought in Danny Zamora, Johnny Perez. You're just bringing in a different set of eyes and kind of just shaking things up a little bit? And what's the thought process? I like that.
I just need another guy to help me out a little bit. You know, it's going to be busy June for us. and I just needed someone to help me out. That was all. You know, I don't really have a set assistant. You know, the way everybody has an assistant, I don't really have one. And, you know, Danny's a capable trainer who can do stuff on his own, but, you know, he's a good friend of mine and someone who, more importantly, I trust and he's knowledgeable. So I had asked him, hey, you know, I got some big fights coming up. I'd like you to come on board and, you know, help me out.
One of the things that he was saying, you guys were kind of working on Chris's right hand, but also, you know, he's just kind of, like you said, an extra eye. What has he brought to Josecito here?
Just like you said, an extra set of eyes, you know, someone who's faced, been in some big fights himself with Yoni Perez. So more than anything, just reinforcing the game plan. You know, if there's something I miss, he'll throw a little word of advice. So, you know, him and I will put our brains together and formulate what we think is going to be a victorious game plan on June 23rd.
As a game plan for you, Josecito, what is it that you think that you need to automatically jump on Victor Ortiz? I mean, what have you seen of him, and what are your thoughts personally of some of the flaws that is just kind of it's almost like flirtatious to anybody that would get step in the ring against him?
Yeah, you know, Victor Ortiz is a good fighter. He's a strong fighter. I feel like I have better defense than Victor Ortiz, and I think we're gonna end up exchanging real good. So if I get the opportunity and he opens up, I think I can land some great punches and that'll connect, and he'll definitely feel. You know what? I gotta stand my ground basically, and that's what I'll do. I'll stand my ground.
Henry, what do you think?
Well, you know, I'll be honest. You know, the part where we want to get to is we want to see if not more than anything stylistically. To me, the mental part. To me, I want to see if Victor Ortiz is the Victor Ortiz that beat Andre Berto, or is the Victor Ortiz that quit against Maidana. Is that Victor Ortiz gone for good, or is it somewhere still lurking, dying to come out? We're gonna find out.
Now, let me ask you that, because that was going to be my follow-up question. Is that the smartest thing, though, to do? Because it's almost like you're going in the jaws of the lion there to find out whether he's hungry or he's not.
Well, Jose's not going to win a stylistic boxing match, if that's what you're asking. I think, you know, with constant pressure, body work, you know, it's no secret what Jose does. And, you know, Victor is a good fighter, good, talented, but, you know, he's not the most, not the most stylistic boxer. You know, I think you're going to have two guys that are going to come forward and, you know, really lift their hands up.
Josecito, what do you think? I mean, I would call that suicidal tendencies, trying to see whether or not you got a chin check or not. I mean, is that something that you want to find out, is how well you can take a punch at 147?
Well, yeah, I'm definitely going to have – we're going to see that. We're going to see that, because I will get a chance to land punches of my own. But – you know what? We're just two fighters is going battling it out basically, and we'll see who comes up on top.
Do you guys? You know, there's also this kind of other storyline, and maybe it has really nothing to do with you, but he's entering into Staples Center, the place where he basically, you know, kind of waved no mas against Marcos Maidana. Is it important for you? This is for Henry or Josecito. Is it important for you guys to kind of take him back to a place like that, or do you think, you know, give him some uncertainty right off the bat, or does that not even matter? Do you think that's just so long ago that it's not going to play into his brain at all?
Well, to me, Gabe, I think it's something that you know, like I said, in a tough fight, a drag-out back-and-forth fight, I mean, it's a valid question. Will he resort back to that, or is he the Victor Ortiz and Andre Berto? To be honest, I mean, the jury's still out. The jury would still be on. You got to remember, we have Eduardo Garcia, who has been in our gym for 3 years, who took Victor in, and he has told us everything there is to know about Victor. So what you guys seen with Maidana, they've known for years. They've seen it in the gym. There's been long rumors about him not having the greatest chin and you know, maybe not the biggest heart. But for us, we're going to prepare for the Victor Ortiz to beat Andre Berto. And who knows, the Victor Ortiz that fought Maidana still may be lurking somewhere inside of him. Well, who knows, you know? It's Jose's job to figure it out.
moving past this, you know, and not to, to look past Tocito, but what do you got going with Chris? I mean, he said he didn't know who he was fighting. Do you guys have any idea now?
No, we still don't. Still don't have an opponent set.
Dave is available, just letting you know, and he is a heavyweight.
Yeah, I think, you know what, though, with knowing Henry, Henry thrives off of this chaos. You know, I don't think it bothers you a bit. You don't even know who you're going to be, you guys are going to be facing, right, Henry?
Not at all. Makes no difference, really. The mindset that Chris is in right now and, you know, where he's at, you know, as far as training, it's fine. You know, we'll find out when we find out.
He seems so locked in. He was like, I'm 255, 260 is like the threshold. If I start to hit that, I start to cut the weight. You always tell us the truth about that. You know, is that really the threshold? And is he just kind of, he just seems different. He just seems like he really wants to fight, really wants to train, and he understands the longer I'm away from the sport, the more trouble I'm going to get into.
Well, I mean, you know, like I said, I think the activity thing for him is good. Like you know, him walking around at 255, you know, like I said, he didn't really know when he was going to fight. There was June being thrown around. There was up until a couple days before Jose accepted the Victor Ortiz fight. Chris was going to fight July 7th. So, I mean, you know, the fact that he walks around at 255 and comes to camp at 255 is great because, let me tell you, in the past, he used to come to camp with 280, 290, you know, almost 300 times. And, we were lucky to get him down to 55, you know. So losing 15 pounds in a month for him, he'll be at 240 on fight night, and he's fine.
Hey, how does he feel? I don't know if he's talked to you about this, you know, and, you know, obviously Jose Cito Lopez has been working for this moment to headline, to be in the big stage, for people to, you know, just really kind of debate about a real big match like this. How does Chris feel about being put in the back seat and not being the headliner?
He doesn't care. He said he's happy for Jose. You know, he said he's happy Jose got this opportunity. He doesn't care about that. He just said he's glad Jose's getting a big opportunity.
You know, the last big fight for Jose Cito Lopez was against Vargas. We all found out what happened with that fight there. I got a lot of fans that keep telling me, yelling at me, saying that, Jose, you were robbed, you know, that you should have gotten that fight. You should have walked away with that victory against Vargas. When this fight was mentioned to you with Victor Ortiz and asked of you to sign on, how long did it take for you to make a decision?
It was actually pretty quick. You know, we did a little bit of talking with my promoters, and it was actually pretty quick. It was interesting. I didn't really expect for my name to be brought up, especially, you know, mainly because it's a different weight division. But I think it's a great matchup. You know, if you see it on paper, you know, I understand why most people think it's not a great matchup. I mean, coming up from 140, you know, if you see it on paper. But if you've seen me fight, I think you'd expect a great matchup on the 23rd.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what? I'm glad that you mentioned the matchup. You go, I mean, and I'm glad that you kind of realized that, you know, you threw out there that you were surprised that you were picked out of the hat. Your name was pulled out of there. Do you feel like do you guys get the sense that you guys were picked as just as merely as an opponent, not a real serious threat? And does that play to your guys' favor?
No, I absolutely agree. That's why I believe why we were picked. You know, they figured, okay, you know, smaller guy coming up from 47. You know, I absolutely feel that. I think maybe they feel Jose was the safest route.
Right.
And that's fine. That's fine. I mean, you know, to be honest, when the fight came about, it took me. In my head, I thought it's a no-brainer, you know, because to be honest, you said stepping up to Victor Ortiz as opposed to fighting Kendall Holt was a big step in level. I don't really think so. To me, they're equally as dangerous, to be honest. You know, Kendall Holt's no pushover. You know, he's a
right.
dangerous fighter just like Ortiz is, you know. He's a former world champion just like Ortiz is, you know.
Absolutely, you know. Going back with Jose Cito really quick. With that loss with Jesse Vargas, what did you learn from that? And what are you going to carry into this fight with Victor Ortiz?
You know what? You know, I was mainly disappointed in Jesse Vargas' fight, you know, really, because I know this is a guy that I can beat. And I could have done a lot better. I lost a little bit of momentum, you know, towards the end of the later rounds. But if I'm fighting a 10-rounder, I got to win 8-9 rounds out of the fight to pull off a victory, you know. And I'm going in there. My training is a lot better now. I'm focusing more on technique. You know, this weight issue, I'm fighting at 147. I won't have to focus at 47. I'm actually having some trouble trying to keep my weight up, which has never been, you know, an issue. So,
well,
you know what?
That's Henry, and
this will all be advantages for me, I feel, and it'll show. It'll show in the fight.
Chris has some wonderful techniques for putting on weight, so I think you should just check with him.
No, don't do that, man.
You're like, look, 6 pizzas around midnight is perfect. It just puts the weight right on, and it stays on, too.
And a 6-pack to wash it down, you'll be all right, bro. You'll be all right.
You'll be a 54 in no time. Henry, I think you were kind of a catalyst. I suddenly wanted vodka as soon as you came on.
I know. And really quick, just to mention how people, Henry Ramirez is the guy that we did the Hurt Business with. We followed him around with cameras. The second episode is coming out very soon. We get a lot of emails, a lot of raves about it. A lot of people enjoyed it. They love the honesty and the truth of Henry Ramirez. You're going to love the second episode where we really got a glimpse and we were able to capture his relationships with his fighters and the different personalities that his fighters bring, not just professional fighters, but amateur fighters that mingle around the gym that where Henry Ramirez trains at. Well, guys, I want to wish you guys all the luck in the world. I can't wait for this fight. I think this is a fantastic fight. Josecito Lopez, I think if you just come out as Jose, I think you're going to come up on top, man. This is a great fight. I applaud you for getting the opportunity and taking the risk to do this.
Thanks, guys. You know what? You know, it's a great opportunity for me. And come June 23rd, anybody that watches or is there to see the fight will not be disappointed. I promise that.
Absolutely.
The all action. Let me ask you guys something, one last thing before we let you go. There's a big fight this weekend. I want you guys' professional opinion on Frotch versus Butte. I don't know if you guys pay attention to that division, but are you guys curious about the fight? Do you have any ideas on the fight?
I think it's going to be a good fight. I'm real interested to see how you know, I like Frotch. I like his stubbornness, man. He's just a tough, rugged guy.
Right.
You know, I was a little surprised that Andre Ward won. I was just surprised how, I don't want to say easy, but how, you know, yeah, how easy he won, how one-sided
he won. It was easy.
You know, and, I think he'll give a better account of himself against Butte, but I don't think he'll beat Butte though.
Do you think, because he's a big guy, you could recognize this as a trainer? I was wondering this. He looked flat to me. I mean, maybe he was overtrained, but I wonder. He's a big frame guy. Do you think it was like one fight too many at 168, and that might have done it?
That's a very good possibility. You know, maybe it is, and you know, he's been through some wars also. You know, so maybe. Maybe that, or, you know, maybe he's definitely on the downslide now.
Could be. I mean, you never know. With these guys, I mean, it's always a crapshoot because these guys fight so seldom. You know, you could see the results in Chris, how good he looks, how sharp he looks, because he's fighting so often. Do you see a huge difference in him just in that, just fighting, that activity, just keeping him going? It's a more polished machine?
Right. Well, because, you know, there's not as much time off in between camps, you know, as opposed when, you know, when he was fighting on HBO and, you know, you're lucky if you get two or three dates a year, you know. Sometimes he would take 2 months off in between fights, you know, whereas as opposed now, sometimes it's 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, that's kind of everything I had, and I appreciate it. Guys, I look forward to the fight, and I'm probably going to have to come out and see you guys at the camp if you guys allow me to come. That'd be
well,
great
absolutely.
To come see you in person. Cool. All right, then. Then it's a date. All right, then, guys. You get that sorted.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
I will come see you. All right, then, guys.
All right, thanks,
take
guys.
Care.
All right. Take care.
Good luck.
Trainer Henry Ramirez and his fighter, Josecito Lopez, going to be facing Victor Ortiz at the Staples Center. Great fight. I can't wait for this fight. And I had to make a trip myself out there to go see both those guys. Big kid. He's a big kid. You know, we saw that in the pictures. He's about an inch taller than Victor Ortiz, or maybe even two. Not really sure, you know. And he puts in the work, man, in the gym. We saw that. We saw it with Vargas. Yeah, you know, it's still a very debatable. Some folks felt that he won. Some folks felt that he lost with Vargas.
He's got a tough style, you know. And you thought that it was a clear Jesse win, right? It was like 7-5 for you.
I can't remember exactly, you know, what I had it, but I think I had Lopez losing by a point, or maybe a point or two. I'm not really sure. But and you know, the thing that sucked is I picked him. Remember, I was picking him to win because I really thought that he has the style to beat Jesse Vargas, you know, and it was showing. It was showing in the rounds, and he had a little bit of lackluster that some of those rounds I felt he kind of gave away. He just gave him away.
Well, he left him on the table. It was like the other guy did flashy stuff and the jab, and he was waiting. He waited too much, you know. And what I love about Henry Ramirez and Josecito too, you know, but Henry was just straight up with me. I was in Vegas for the fight.
Right.
And I came over to, you know, they're leaving the ring, and I walked over to the aisle. And I was incensed because, to me, I saw a clear Josecito win. You know, even with the jab of Jesse and the good movement, I just thought Josecito landed the better punches. And I was like, dude, I think you guys just got robbed. And Henry just kind of looked at me and was like, nah, I don't really think we did. He was straight up like that. And I was like, well, shit, if
he's
in the corner,
on,
you know, he's got the best seat in the house, you know? Yeah, he even came on and was like,
he came on and said that, you know? And he said, you know, one thing I never do is I never lie to my fighters. He said it in camera when we were doing the reality series with him. He's all, I don't lie to my fighters, you know? I'll lie to their wives and I'll do this and that. But when it comes to telling them the truth of if they're effing up in the ring, I'm going to tell them the truth. You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's pretty funny, though, that they kind of went back to Henry and, like, we tried to get one over on Gabe to cause controversy on Boxing Scene. I should have printed it, but I kind of just could tell. You know, Chris has always got that gleam in his eye. Like, I'm telling you something, and it's a little bit of a joke, and I could just tell, like, they hadn't really replaced. You know, there was Danny. And then actually I went on Facebook and I saw that Henry was at where he was at. And I was like, oh, that's exactly why you weren't there. He's just a family man. But, you know, Chris, I thought he looked really good yesterday. He was wearing a gray suit, a lavender shirt. Not a lot of people can pull that off. And he did. And he looked in really good shape. His face looks good. And he was saying, I'm going to drop about 15 pounds and I'll be in fighting shape and I'll be ready to go. But, like, you know, in the course of a camp, I mean, you probably need a little buffer. You need a little something to kind of lose, you know, or you're going to come in too light. But it looked good. You didn't look like Fat Chris.
I'm being asked by a few folks of, okay, so what's your pick with Josecito Lopez and Victor Ortiz? And I don't know yet. That's how much I like this fight. I don't know yet. I honestly, just finding about how, you know, they're going to be fighting each other, just like with Brandon Rios and Mauricio Herrera, I think – if you really think about it, Victor Ortiz and Brandon Rios, they're almost in that same position. They're fighting some real tough kids right now. They're going to be – this is a real fight. This is real competition. These guys are just not opponents. These guys are going to come not for a paycheck. They're going to collect a paycheck and a good one, a healthy one. But at the same time, they're trying to make their mark. They're trying to make their mark in the ring. And when you got guys that want what you have, that are itching and they're gnawing at it, they're dangerous. These guys are, and these one makes great fights. You know, I know we had the manager on saying, you know, of Josie and Winky Rice saying that, you know, these fighters, blah blah blah, Cedric. You're right, a lot of the fighters, but we can't throw all of them in that sandbox.
No, it's like a drug case. Everything's case by case.
Exactly.
You know, each guy, and I'm not, you know, it's not like we know for a fact Danny Garcia was like, hell no, I don't want to fight that guy. He's got the best manager, or arguably the best manager, or advisor, whatever Al Haymon is, in Al Haymon. You know, I mean, there's Cameron Duncan, and there's other good managers, a lot of good managers in the business world, but Al is a guy that just seems to really control things behind the scenes, and
if I was a fighter, I would listen to him. If I was a fighter, I would sign with him. I would hope that he would want.
Yeah, you know, we've said
you know?
This.
I can't knock the hustle. You know?
Yeah, we've said this before. You know, I mean, as much criticism we give about Al Heyman, we do say there's one thing that we have to applaud him. He's a great manager. He gets his fighters low risk fights with a lot of high reward and money. You know,
sure.
But as a fan though, we fall in love with guys like Josecito Lopez, Mauricio Herrera, because these are guys that you just ask them. I mean. I walking down the street, I you know, go, hey Jose, you're not doing anything? Hey, how about fighting this guy right now? Okay. And those are the kind of fighters that we do like. Those are the guys that we end up surround ourselves around because they come to fight. They just want to fight. And as an entertainment value, for some reason, in a lot of ways, we don't appreciate that. You know, we ask for guys to come and fight. But when the guys that do come to fight, we kind of throw them under the rug. We whoosh them away.
Yeah, I mean, it's
kind of weird.
It is kind of. Well, also, these guys get kind of rushed to titles, too. Like, Danny is a young fighter, and he just had kind of his big, you know, he had the Kendall Holt fight, and then boom, it's like, let's get him in there and get him that belt. And any more of the business, like he was saying, it's like a reality show. And I kind of agree on some level. I mean, not all of it, but, like, kind of the American. You know, the HBO, Showtime, there's a certain segment of that, of those fights that do feel like a reality show. I mean, shit, 24/7, you know, it's a reality show. It isn't, it's not really, like, it's not real. I mean, I can tell you stories. I'll tell you offline. But it's, you know, seeing a guy like Danny, and I'm not going to denigrate him. He's a fighter. And like I said, there's a limited shelf life for these guys, and they got to make their money. It sucks for Josie, and I would wish that Danny, I wish that every champion would be kind of like, look, I want to take on one of my mandatories, you know? These guys, the mandatory is kind of gone. We always saw those growing up. I mean, I have the full Tito Trinidad
words,
collection.
Yeah, certain words that have just been
all of these mandos. Yeah.
Right. You know, mandatory to contender, they've been lost. They're just lost in this world of what we've created in boxing for some reason. And you're absolutely right, brother. I mean, you're absolutely right, you know. And we saw this on, you know, the worldwide of sports on Saturday mornings and on even on Tuesday on the Tuesday night fights, you know, where champions were taking their mandatories. They were taking the number one contender. But and I like what some of the guys are discussing here on Twitter. They're listening to the radio show saying, you know, Victor Ortiz could be more or less of a media hype, you know, a media champion. And I think that is the right way of sometimes labeling some of these fighters that have a championship, you know, belt. I just
okay.
need to check now. I apologize. Yeah. That's what some dead air. I was reading really quick and I told people. But and I'm also getting distracted too because I'm hit up by which is I found this kind of weird. Lamont Peterson's publicist hitting me up about something, and so I got to get back to him. But going back to that, Josecito Lopez, all the praise in the world. He's a fans fighter. He's gonna come to fight, and I like this match. The pressure that he's gonna bring. The pressure that this kid does bring, it's going to be, it's going to answer some questions about Victor Ortiz. But along that line, it's going to answer some questions about Lopez. Gaining 7 pounds. I know some folks go, yeah, but it's only 7 pounds. It's a big difference. That's a big difference.
It is. You know, it really, the welterweights, like the middleweights are like, you know, really the middleweights more than anything. But welterweights, you enter that period. With that division where they move around, you know, like the little guys, but they start to hit like the big guys. And Victor hits like one of the big guys. He packs a punch. Josecito, I think, hits strong. I'm not sure. We're going to find out if he hits Victor and does any damage. I think,
yeah.
You know, like watching Berto's technique seems a little flawed and he loses some power. He kind of wings his shots and he really like winds his whole body and brings it around. And in some ways, I think he fights against his body with his technique. Like, you see with that right hand sometimes,
Like, rather than just shooting straight from his chest, like it's at his chin and it just comes out, there's a little bit of a wind-up. And most fighters don't get it, some trainers don't get it, that when you do that, when, like, you pull down and then, like, come back around, it's like you're fighting against your body. Rather than just, like, snapping that hip and everything and turning your foot like you're putting out a cigarette and bringing that right hand just straight from where it is. Like, Tito Trinidad used to throw a great straight right hand.
Right.
It was one of his better weapons. It just came right off of his chin. You know, and Berto always kind of wound up. Victor winds up a little bit. It'll be incumbent on Lopez to come straight from his chin, straight and cut that line. You know, like to really like kind of intercept what Berto or rather Ortiz is doing. When Ortiz he keeps that chin high and he comes around with the wide hook, he's got to come right down the middle with it. Although Victor has tightened up over the last few fights, and I'm also curious. Big question, what's he going to be like after getting knocked out by Floyd Mayweather? You know, people are kind of taking it for granted that he's just going to win. But this is a guy coming off of a knockout loss.
Yeah.
So is he going to come out with something to prove and blow it? Is he going to come out with something to prove and just dominate? Or is this going to be an all-action fight and just down to the wire and may the best man win? It's going to be a good fight. I can't wait to be there ringside at Staples.
You know, and two, I mean, with Victor, with Ortiz, you know, and like I said, you know, with the whole media champion. But at the same time, you got to kind of applaud the guy, too, taking on this fight. This is a tough matchup, even though they probably looked at it, well, you know, this guy's coming up in weight. He's not a big hitter. He does bring pressure. He should give you some rounds. He's been in some tough matches, you know. Madonna was one guy that stopped him. And look where where Marcos has ended up at. You know, he became a very popular name among us boxing community. You know, Lamont Peterson, another tough guy that he fought. You know, so it's not like Berto was just his one stop and he got his fame from him. I mean, he did. He got more popular with the Berto fight. But he's been in with some recognizable, incredible names. You know, and now adding Josecito Lopez to this ledger is another step up for him. Mentally, physically, and being a competitor, he's gonna face somebody that's gonna be competing against him.
Yeah, I mean that's true. You know, people do—they kind of forget. Well, they think, well, you know, he let Peterson off the hook, but now you look at Peterson, and he's a tough guy, and he was able to kind of, come back in the fight and really put it to Victor a little bit and get that draw. Victor's the kind of guy that's kind of up and down, and it really is a round-by-round battle with him. He's got to keep focused and keep doing what he's supposed to be doing and not get discouraged. He's a guy that, you know, one of the things, and I'm certainly not a professional fighter, but there's something I observe with other fighters in the gym. Like, there's a habit that guys have where they're hitting the pads and they finish that combination, and then you see their kind of, not their physical guard, but their mental guard kind of drop, like, okay, I did that, and they kind of bounce, and they kind of come out of fighting mode, and then they get back into it, and they hit the next combo.
I hate
you,
when
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know exactly. I yell at my
son.
It's a
really bad habit. Yeah.
I yell at my little one. He does that. You know, he'll have perfect form. He'll, you know, turn with his punches and land. And then a lot of people do this. They end up just dropping, and they kind of relax, and they walk back when they should keep that composure and that stance and that pose. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, man, and I agree.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I wonder with Victor if that's going to be an issue. But it's one of those things. I kind of lost my train of thought for a second. But it is one of those things that with Victor, you can kind of, I almost wonder if he does that, has that habit of finishing a combination in the gym, and then he drops his mental guard. Because you see that. He dropped it with Floyd big time. But he also dropped it a little bit with Berto when he got dropped, and you see him kind of smile and play to the crowd a little bit like, oh, shucks, I just got dropped, and then he kind of gets back into mode. And that's, I don't know, I mean, every fighter is different, but that always seems a little dangerous to me considering his history. And I prefer seeing him, like, get knocked down, get right back up, and I'm like, let's do this thing. But, you know, he did get back up, and he knocked Berto right down, so I guess who the hell am I, you know?
Well, you know, with that Berto fight, well, we did see that he mustered it up. Like, he really, I wouldn't say he forced himself, but it was almost like with Victor Ortiz, it has to be the perfect night, the perfect moment for that viciousness to come out. And other nights, you can get the Victor that's not so vicious, a Victor that kind of shells. He's like, he's almost like a kid when he gets embarrassed. What does he do? He looks for a way out. And if you embarrass him, I think that's what Jose Cito Lopez has to do, is embarrass him. Not just starting in the ring. I think he needs to get a little bit more mental with him in press conferences. Not all smiles and giggles. He's got to just, you know, go for the throat.
Yeah, well, maybe he should go in for the kiss and see if that affects a little bit.
Let's pull up our fight schedule here on Leaving the Ring.
You want to freak out your friend just while you're talking to him. Just kind of close your eyes and, like, go in for the kiss. It really freaks everybody out.
Yeah, and then,
especially guys.
I just been Ortiz.
But, you know, it was interesting talking to him. Is he just, and that's what I really like about Victor, is he doesn't let things bother him. You know, if they do, you can't tell.
Were you looking at his lips a little bit when he was talking to you, going like,
oh, shit. No, it wasn't. I was pulled into his eyes, and I did admire his hair. But that's just something we'll talk about off the radio.
Did he greet you with a hug and a kiss?
No, we kind of give each other the kind of, like, you know,
like,
the bro hug. The bro hug.
Yeah.
But what was interesting was, like, he didn't, you know, it's like I asked him, like, you know, is this going to be an emotional thing for you to return back to Staples, you know, after the scene of the crime of Maidana? He's like, you know, I don't even think about that anymore. Like, it was a long time ago. I've had other fights. And it wasn't like, you know, some fighters are trying to, like, snow job you. And he was just like, no, like, I don't. It's just not something that I think about. That's just, you know, I was off that night, and I don't know.
I don't believe that. You know what? I mean, you always have to think about that one moment where you may just not. I don't want to say he made himself look foolish, but he made himself very questionable to fight fans. And how could you not think about that when that is constantly, you're constantly being reminded? If it's not in, you know, forums or interviews, it's right there in your face. It's in your mind. It's embedded in there. So I don't believe that.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I always think, like, you know, show me a guy that doesn't mind losing. And you know, with that Vince Lombardi quote, show me a guy that doesn't like losing or doesn't mind losing, and I'll show you a loser. And
right.
I'm not calling Victor Ortiz a loser, but to be at this level, you've got to be hyper-competitive. And he seems totally fine with that loss. I'm like, that would drive me crazy. I mean, I remember talking like Danny Jacobs over the years, who should be coming back here pretty soon. We're going to probably have him on the radio show very soon to kind of discuss where he's been. But I digress. When I asked him about Dmitry Pirog, he's like, you know, I can go my whole career. I've got to fight that guy. That's just got to happen. I've got to punch him back for what he did to me.
Yeah.
And with Victor, it's like, I don't even think about that. My dad is old news. Screw him. I don't even think about him. And the Floyd thing, it doesn't really even seem to resonate with him. It's like, that was old news. I'm focused on Berto. Now I'm focused on Lopez. And maybe that's a good thing. I mean, they always say that about quarterbacks. You know, having a short memory is, you know.
Either
a good thing.
Either he's a very good cover-up guy, either he's not a very competitive guy, or you may be right. He has a short memory.
I mean, they always say that with quarterbacks. You know, a guy throws a bad pass or he throws an interception. A real gunslinger doesn't give a shit. I mean, he cares, but he's like, he was on the next play going, oh my God, I just screwed up. He's just like, all right, that didn't work out. Let's go to the next play because I'm going to throw a deep bomb and we're going to get a touchdown. Maybe that's what Victor is. He was a power puncher. He looks at it like, all right, that didn't work out, but let's go next time and I'll knock somebody out. And like, screw it. I don't know. He's an interesting guy. I mean, he's a puzzle, you know. And
yeah, he
I
is.
Talk to him, I'm kind of thrown.
He's complex.
You know?
He's very complex. I mean, he has a very complex character, you know. I want to really quick just send out a thank you for everybody that's been reaching out to be a writer for Leaving the Ring. We've even got, what I was kind of thrown back is, writers from newspapers that want to be part of Leaving the Ring and that say they follow and listen to us. And I also want to thank James Byrne, who wrote the story on me. You know, we never really got too much into it for Modesto B, but it helped me out so much that my hall called me up and my dispatcher, who handles all the sending jobs out to people, calls me up and tells me he loved the article, didn't even know that we did this. You know, now he's going to start listening. And then it's at the end of the conversation, go, hey, Dave, you ready to go back to work? So obviously James Burns' article had a big influence of this happening. So I just want to thank everybody in their support and thank everybody that's been submitting some articles asking to be part of the Leaving the Ring family. And we'll get back to you as soon as we're done going through stuff and then selecting who's going to be part of the Leaving the Ring family. But let's see if we have that fight schedule here with Mr. Gabriel Montoya.
I do, in fact. May 25th, Friday, 2012, at the Ameristar Casino in St. Charles, Missouri. ESPN2, Alistair Rakhimov, 23-0, versus Ji-Hoon Kim, 23-7. Rakhimov's probably going to win, but Ji-Hoon Kim is always action, dude.
That's what I was about to say. I love that guy, man. I mean, regardless, I don't even care who he fights. I just like to go see him fight, you know, watch him fight.
And way down in support, there's a bunch of other fights, but open card, Leon Spinks, the third. He's 1-0. He's taken on Steven, S-T-V-E-N, Steven, colon. That's an interesting name. He's 2-1. Interesting. Seeing Leon Spinks, the young Leon Spinks, coming up. At the Horseshoe Casino in Hammond, Indiana, Brezo Kendo, 33-7, takes Joey Abel, 25-5. Let's see how able Joey is if he can get Okendo out of there. At the Warner Center in Marriott, Woodland Hills, California, Robert Frankel, 30-11-1, takes on Cleotis Pendarvis, one of my favorite names in the sport, 14-3-2. Also on that card is Tyrell Hendricks. And that's pretty much it. Oh, actually, Friday at the Newport Leisure Center in Newport, Wales, top prospect Frankie Gavin, a guy that I really enjoy watching work, 12-0 versus Nasser Al-Harbi, 13-0-1 in the Battle of Unbeatens. I'm going to go with Frankie Gavin, though. I think the matchmakers around him know what they're doing. He's an up-and-coming guy. He really is fun to watch. Now we get to May 26th, Saturday, 2012, the Nottingham Arena in Nottingham, England. on Epix, well, if it works, Lucien Boutte, 30-0 versus Carl Froch, 28-2 for the Ring Magazine, number one light heavyweight versus number three. For the IBF light heavyweight belt. Actually, that's super middleweight belt. What do you think, Dave? You got to make a pick now.
I like this fight. I keep saying how much I like this fight, you know. I'm going to tell you what my pick. Honestly, I didn't really have a clear pick in the beginning when this fight was matched up, because with Lucien Boutte, the best opposition and somebody that he's faced that kind of showed me, okay, he's close to – I'm now close to understanding why so many people are high on him is when he fought Glenn Johnson. Though to me, Glenn is a veteran warrior, was just not the Glenn Johnson of a few years back, okay? But that's the most credible name that I could honestly, you know, bring out of that whole resume of Lucien Boutte. Now, Carl Froch in the Super 6 – To me, even though some folks would say that Super 6 has ruined fighters, to me, Carl Froch benefited. He was the benefiter of that Super 6 tournament because it just helped him out with his tools. It helped him sharpen him and help him understand a little bit more about himself of just not being a complete brawler. It kind of showed him that there's other ways of winning fights. There's other ways of portraying yourself in the square ring. And I think now he's that Boutte's really getting probably the best of Carl Froch. And a more confident Carl Froch and a more dangerous. Andre Berto, when he faced Andre Ward shut him down, and I think shut him down for a number of reasons. One, I think Froch was afraid of Ward. That's the first thing. I think that he was concerned about him. He understood that this guy's got some tremendous boxing skills, and he psyched himself out a little bit too much thinking that he had to compare his boxing skills to an Andre Ward. And, you know, fighters, we've seen this happen. When they overthink something too much, what happens? They can't move. They can't do what they're normally known to do. With Boutte, though, I honestly think Froch thinks, I can beat this guy, I can hurt this guy, and only thing that he has up against me is his speed. His defense is questionable. He hasn't been clipped. He hasn't really been exposed for his defense. But, you know, Lushan likes to put his hands down. He almost kind of does this Sergio Martinez sometimes when he gets very comfortable and confident. And I think that's where the Cobra can strike. I'm going to go with the upset special, man. You know me. I love doing the upset special. I'm going to go with Carl Froch. I think that he catches him after Lushan Butte having a very successful couple rounds, but gets a little too comfortable and gets a little lazy, and he gets caught. He gets caught with Carl Froch and put down.
Interesting. That's, you know, I can see it. It's just such an interesting fight because, you know, Butte is a guy I've kind of been critical of. I'm like, you know, I'm not sure if this guy's going to pull it out against an elite fighter. I see him kind of struggle with Lebrado Andrade. Then he comes back and gets his revenge against him. He took out Edison Miranda, but that was like his big step up. And a year before, that was Andre Ward's, you know, big step up. He's not a guy that is really, to me, he's a proven draw. There's no question there.
Right.
But he hasn't really taken on the elite guys. And they've picked Froch, who's coming off just loss. He's got a lot to prove. He's a tough man. But he looked like he couldn't pull the trigger a little bit against Ward. Although, you know, Ward is going to be like Hopkins, I think, at the end of the day. Nobody's ever going to look good against him. Even if they end up beating him, they're not going to look good against him. He's just got that kind of style. But he looked like he just didn't know what to do with him, like you said. I don't know if it was fear or he was just like, you know, if I extend myself too much, I'm going to open myself up to this quick dude who's just outboxing me. But he looked out of sorts. I mean, you've got the home Kansas advantage. You know, he's in his hometown, Froch is, in Nottingham. Butte's coming there. I mean, he does bring some clout. But I'm going to say, I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know who's going to win this fight. For me, it's going to just be throwing out a name if I really pick one. I think I'm going to go with Butte. I think he's going to hit and move, and he's going to keep away enough and keep Froch kind of turning all night. There's going to be some moments, but I think it's going to be a Froch victory. There might be a flash knockdown for Butte, but I'm going to take Butte going in there and getting a close decision, maybe a split decision over Froch. But anything can happen. That's just a wild ass guess.
Yeah, anything can really happen with this fight here. And you know, I think for Froch, if his camp was watching tape and studying, the best time to really open up against Butte. It's literally, I would tell Froch, hey, you know, just lose the first couple of rounds. Let this guy not get on his bicycle. Let this guy get confident. Let him come to you. And when he decides to go to that body, that's when you open up. That's when you're going to catch him. And that's when he becomes very vulnerable, is when he decides to open up to the body and try to land those really heavy body shots that he can. Now, it can backfire on Froch most definitely, but that's boxing. That's why we like the sport. You know, and to me, both guys facing each other, great matchup. Both guys got huge followings, and both guys do pack a big punch. Only thing that's up against Froch in this one is Butte has some speed. You know, I think when going in with Andre Ward, there was a lot of things that were up against him. One was Ward can box. Ward is quick. And the other thing, Ward's got a great jab, and he's got great defense. Those are four things, and those are four things you got to be worried and concerned about. I think Froch was very worried and concerned about, and I don't blame him, and kind of shutting down and being hesitant, being tentative and into that fight. With Butte, it's a little bit different, man. This is a completely different matchup. You know, even with Kessler, he was fighting a guy that really tried to outbox him, you know, kept his distance with the jab. It was the jab of the Knights. I don't see that happening because I kind of see Lushan Butte does want to show he's the best 168-pounder, and I can kind of see that he wants to be great, and he's going to dare himself, and we want that because when guys do dare themselves, they sometimes end up on their backs.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's going to be an interesting fight. I think it's going to be fun, you know, and it certainly it's an interesting style matchup. It's more of a like a boxer brawler and Froch against a boxer puncher in Butte, who can turn into a mover if need be. So it's going to be a fun fight.
It's going to be a real fun fight.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the kind of fight that we love because we don't know who's going to win.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah. Oh man, I can't wait. I can't wait, you know. If you haven't picked up your Undisputed Fight magazine, the May issue, it is out. The Jose Benavides family are the featured story. Carlos Acevedo's from The Cruelest Sport did a great piece. You know, if you want to check that out, I mean, that guy's a phenomenal writer among all the writers of Undisputed and Leaving the Ring. These guys put in a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of time into the craft. Check out everything that was put into there. And check out the Benavides story, man. I mean, thicker than water. Also, Barbara Pinella put up a great story about Azteca, the Azteca gym. You know, she went out there, checked it out, found out some back history. And at the same time, they're in some trouble in their city. And, you know, they need some help there, need some funding because they're not getting what they used to get support from the city. I can't remember the name of the city that they're from, but that just kind of slipped my mind there. But check it out, Undisputed Fight Magazine, the May issue. Look for the next issue coming out. We still haven't figured out who's going to be on the cover of that one. So we're working hard day and night, man, to figure it out. Hey, guys.
This is the Amnesia episode. I'm not done with the fight schedule. I know you moved on. Pierre Cote is in support there, 18-0 versus Mark Lloyd, 15-3. Carl Frampton, who I enjoy. Frampton comes alive, 13-0 versus Raul Herald, 16-0-1. Keep an eye on Frampton. He's colorful. He's fun. He comes to get down. At the Casino del Sol in Tucson, Arizona, on TV Azteca later on that night, Jesus Soto Carras, 24-7-3 versus Saeed El Harak, 10-1-1. That should be an action fight. Carras is never in a boring fight.
Never in a boring fight. Yeah,
he's funny as hell too.
Yeah, he is.
Jose Benavides 14-0 versus Josh Sosa 10-2. I expect Benavides to pull it out. I'll have a feature on Benavides. That'll be the lead this evening on Max Boxing. Hansel Martinez 17-0 versus Jose Cruz 23-6-1, and Jose Roman 13-0 versus Javier Garcia, who's 7-2-1. And finally, rounding out that card, Andre Klimov, a guy I really enjoyed. I watched him spar preparing Michael Katsidis for battle. He's 13-0. He's taken on Alejandro Rodriguez, 14-5. Klimov is one to watch. He's an older guy, but, man, he brings it. In Cancun, Mexico, Fox Español, Pablo Cano, 23-1-1 versus Fidel Munoz, 29-5. I'm picking Cano because there's Canos in my family. In support there, Sergio Thompson, 22-2, versus Sergio Priati, 25-11-1. How about Sergio Thompson just getting right back to work?
I know. Yep.
I like that. Deontay Wilder is also on this card, 21-0, versus Chad Van Sickle, 23-9-5. I wonder who's going to win that fight. And if you're locally, at the Ocean View Pavilion, in Port Hueneme, California, near Oxnard, California, just a little north of L.A., Jose Aguiniga, 32-0, versus Eduardo Arcos, 16-6-1. I'll have a feature on him as well coming up here on Max Boxing, probably Saturday morning. Hopefully, maybe tonight. We'll see how if I'm able to stay up really late. At the Brentwood Center in Brentwood, England, Audley Harrison, 27-5, versus Ollie Adams, 13-3-1. And I believe that is your weekend fight schedule.
Well, there you go. And just to get your boxing fix, make sure you tune in to Noche de Boxeo every Monday night. It's for the Spanish-speaking boxing heads out there. And they always put up a great show, have a great set of guests always scheduled on Monday nights. That's 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. And then now be sure to catch every Sunday night the boxing fix. This is a blitz boxing show. That means it's fast-paced, hard-hitting. They cover all the undercards that we didn't get to have a chance to talk about. We do out the fight schedule, but these guys are going to break it down, and they're going to make their picks, and everybody's always welcome to call into the Boxing Fix. Another great show. I had a lot of fun here with the fight fans. I know my co-host always has a blast because we have a lot of fight people that call in and the interviews, and it's always our pleasure, and we want to thank everybody that supports us and allow us to speak our piece, to speak our thoughts, and allow us to do this job for everybody to tune in and listen.
Yeah, it's so much fun, man. And I really, you know, I just want to just kind of shout out to all the people that have been very supportive during this time. You know, I'm breaking these stories. I still want to give Scott Schaefer a boxing talk the credit for the Birdo. People keep giving it to me.
you know, I know everybody kind of assumes that I knew, and I think I did know before everybody else, but he printed it first. He's got to get the credit. And if you want to give me credit for the Lamont Peterson one, please do. But I can't just sit here and take all the credit all the time. But obviously I'm kind of doing what I'm doing with the PED thing. There'll be more stories. Trust me. This ain't over. We're in the middle of a drug war. There's powers that be that are at work here, trying to kind of squash things and trying to change things around. They're trying to fight change, and change is inevitable. So just stay tuned to Max Boxing. That's what all my drug stories will be there. They should be coming fast and furious here in the weeks to come. But all the love that people are showing me and really being supportive and just kind of been there all along. You, Dave, Steve Kim, Max Boxing, Robert Waterman, who owns Max Boxing, all these people have just been right there next to me, telling me you're doing the right thing and stay on the path. And I really appreciate it. There's other people that should be mentioned, but, you know, I'll mention them when the time is appropriate. But it's just been a good time, man. It's been a great time. Dave, great show as always. I'll catch you next week.
Yep, people don't drink and drive. And remember, you know, all the hard work. You know, we talk about hard work, dedication, Gabriel. The man. And I'm right now, really quick, before we go off the air, watch, people are going to get mad at this one. I got text just right now. The people that handle Timothy Bradley and Duell Diaz, they were asking to come on, but it's the end of the show. So probably maybe next week we'll get them on. And we do have Amir Khan's new conditioning coach that's going to be on Leaving Ring. Anyways, hey, enjoy your weekend. Don't drink and drive. Be safe with your families, and look out for the fights.
Peace.